This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! Poy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Yep, here we are again. One more show this week, one more big show before the big game, the Bills and the Chargers coming up in Los Angeles on Sunday. Good afternoon. Welcome to Friday at One Bills Drive. We've established, I think, for a while now that this is the best day of the work week here. Would you agree, Donald?
This is the best day of the work week. It's Friday. It's say it every week.
But not just because it's Friday. It's just a different feeling in the building, right, when there's a game coming up? No?
Yeah,
yes? Don't
I
you feel it?
I feel like these guys, can't you feel it? Yeah, I mean, we get these feelings every Friday because you know the game is coming. I think right now the team is excited, you know. I mean, they've kind of turned the page to a new chapter, really, you know. And so nobody knows what that chapter is like. Like, nobody knows what they're going to read in this chapter, you know. So we're excited. It's like when you open up a book, you might go through, you know, you look at the index, you can see all the chapters, and you're like, oh, man, that sounds like a good chapter. You know, well, maybe this might be a good chapter, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And so everybody around here is excited. The team is out there on the field, and I'm sure they're excited. Those receivers, everybody's, man, we gotta step up and make plays for
them. Yeah, and again, it goes to what I think we led the show with this yesterday, and I was talking about how I didn't mean to say it was an exhausting season, but it's just another reset. And it seems like every couple of weeks, going right back to training camp, we settled in first 2 weeks of training camp. Mm-hmm. Huh, how stupid are we? We're talking about what a quiet training camp it was.
I know.
And then stuff started happening. Bolden in, out, you know, and trades, and Sammy and Darby, and right into the regular season. And the trades continued, and the moves continued, and the big move for a quarterback switch the other day. It's been a wild ride, and we're just over the halfway point of the season. Who knows what awaits us the final 7 weeks here? Maybe playoffs at the end of the line.
I hope just wins. Yeah, exactly. I mean, how sweet would that be if just playoffs at the end of the line, after all of this stuff, and at the end, you get to week, you know, 16, 17, you're exhausted, and you're like, oh. This has been a long 16 weeks plus with training camp. But, you know, now we got the light at the end of the tunnel, you know. But yeah, they got to win this one.
Yeah.
And that's what – and it's going to be like that every week. You got to win this game. This is an important game for them. They need to get to 6-4 and not be 5-5.
And we talked about this earlier in the week, and it's worth revisiting here as we approach the Bills and the Chargers about where this game stands. And look, we've repeated over and over, it's like a joke. You know, it's a week-to-week season. It is. You don't know what the team you're playing right is going to look like. I mean, let's face it, we don't know what the Bills are going to look like week-to-week these days. But in the big picture, when you look at the standings and you look at the Buffalo schedule, this is a critical game. I'm not going to tell you, you know, people say must win. It's pretty much a must win, even though there's still six games that follow this one. It's a must win for a couple of reasons, because of where the Bills are. It has nothing to do, to me anyway, nothing to do with the quarterback switch or you know, Sean McDermott's decision to switch quarterbacks. It has to do with where they are. Sixth seed in the AFC, seven games left. Four of those seven games ago against teams with losing records. This is one of those games. Right. Baltimore is hanging in there, just a game behind Buffalo with a pretty favorable schedule coming up. The Bills have some tough games coming up, but four games of their final seven against teams with losing records. This is one of those teams, which is, to me, what makes this a critical game. Is it over if they lose? No. But if they win, they're hanging in for another week. They live to fight another day at least.
And that's what you want. You know, you want to live to fight another day. You don't want for this thing to, you know, you lose this game and then all of a sudden, you know, Baltimore wins and maybe they're sitting ahead of you now, you know, and yeah, you're looking up hoping that they lose a game. And no, you want to stay in the driver's seat. And right now they're in the driver's seat, you know, and all you got to do is handle your own business. Everybody do your job. Look at yourself in the mirror. Like I said earlier in the week, look at yourself in the mirror and say to yourself, look, man, we're sitting in the driver's seat right now. As long as I do my job, that's all that matters. I'm going to do my job every single play. The next guy next to me, I hope he does his job too. But all I can worry about is doing my job. And if you get a whole team doing that, then you'll go out to Los Angeles and beat up on them in the road. They need to really, and, you know, in the NFL, statement games are nothing. It's not like college football where, right, oh, they won by 40, so they just moved up in the standings. But they do need to come out in this game. And if you got to fight and scratch and claw to get a win, that's totally fine with me. But I think they need to make a statement to themselves. You know, after coming off the two last games that they played and how bad they played in both those games. They need to make a statement to themselves. We got this thing back together. We're on the right track, you know. And so I don't care about making a statement to everybody else. Make a statement to yourself.
I agree. And I always they'll get asked questions. Every team does. Was that a statement game? Was that a statement game? But I agree with – and usually I'm thinking, whatever, eight, there's only 16 of them. You're making a statement. But I do agree with your point that they need to make a statement to themselves. And to me, the statement is, we're not that team that played so poorly against the Saints. We're not that team that spit up all over themselves down at the Meadowlands a couple of weeks
ago.
That's the statement they need to make to themselves, who they are. I think somewhere deep inside of them, hopefully it comes out this week, there is that team that played so well against the Raiders and so well against Tampa Bay, the team that was taking the ball away, the early Bills of this year that were not letting opponents into the end zone, the Bills that we've seen flashes of where they run the ball well. It could change this week, and I think you are absolutely right. They need to make that statement, not to the media, not to the Chargers, not to the NFL, the national media. They need to make the statement to themselves that that's not who they are the last 2 weeks.
Exactly. As you're trying to make a push to the playoffs, make a statement to yourself. This is who we are. You know, you start to feel good about yourself because next week you got Kansas City, and you're going into a hostile environment in Kansas City, so you need to make a statement to yourself. I felt good. I feel good about this game now. You know, get things rolling on offense, defense, get back to how, you know, they were playing early in the season when they were taking the ball away, when they were stopping the run, all of that stuff. You know, you need to feel good about what you're doing out there on the field individually and collectively as a team. So they need to make a statement to themselves this week.
Let's make a statement on what's coming up on the show. It's our usual jam-packed Friday lineup. Another reason why Friday is the best day to be here. We're going to talk for the next several minutes here, get you caught up on what's going on here at One Bills Drive. At the bottom of this hour, Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, joins us on the line. We'll get his take on this matchup on the quarterback switch. Mark Kelso coming up at 12:30. 1 o'clock, Greg Cosell, the executive producer and analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN with his 48 years of expertise as a senior producer at NFL Films. We'll get Greg Cosell's thoughts. I wonder, he's probably looked at some Nathan Peterman, probably going back to the draft. So we'll get his thoughts on Nathan Peterman's skill set.
I'm sure Greg Cosell has looked at some Nathan Peterman, the draft, and now that they've made this switch, he's probably going look at it. Yeah.
In anticipation of our probing questions at 1 o'clock.
Right, exactly.
Greg Cosell at 1 o'clock today. Coming up at 1:30, a really special guest and a really good guy, Tom Telesco, the general manager of the San Diego Chargers. Went to school a stone's throw away from here, a tight spiral away over in Athol Springs at St. Francis High School. A great Buffalo supporter, you know, comes from the Polian tree of NFL expertise, and he is general manager of the Chargers. Tom Telesco will join us coming up at 1:30 today. 2 o'clock, the lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. You and Zoe good these days? You got any beefs you're going to air out? It's always the airing of grievances on Fridays, the last thing we do on Fridays.
That is the last thing we do. You know,
some bad digital blood between the two of you.
I saw him on Monday up in the cafeteria, and I kind of sunned him a little bit, you know. And what I mean by that is
please.
He was sitting down, and I was walking past, and, you know, he has a bald head. So I just, like, cuffed his head. Ooh. And he was like, hey, man, don't grab my head like that.
That is so disrespectful.
It is, right?
I know.
So maybe he'll come in here and say something about that. But that was it. No Twitter beefs or anything like that.
If he doesn't say something about that,
you're going to bring
I'll
it up.
I'll ask about it. Hey, anybody tap you on the head lately? How does that sit with you? How could you do that to a grown man?
Yeah.
Really?
In front of his boys, too.
Yeah.
Hey, don't do that in front of my friends.
How can you do that? Lorenzo coming in at 2 o'clock today. Now, the Bills on the practice field as we speak. They should be wrapping up practice any minute now. They started about an hour and 15 minutes ago, the practice update. Don't worry about the kicker. I know I was at the grocery store yesterday, and a guy came up to me and goes, "How's going to be okay? How's going to be okay?" And I said, "I think he is."
Yeah.
He was on the injury report. Actually, did not practice yesterday with a hip issue, but according to Sean McDermott, House looks good, moving in the right direction. Should be okay. No practice today for left tackle Cordy Glenn with his foot and ankle. No practice for running back Mike Tolbert with his hamstring. Doesn't look as good, you'd have to say, for them. If we get it in time before 3. We'll get you the injury report for Friday's game. Limited practice today for a couple of others. Tight end Charles Clay with his knee. I think he'll be ready to go. Wide receiver Jordan Matthews with his knee. And defensive end Jerry Hughes with his shin and calf injury. I think they expect that Jerry Hughes will be ready to play on Sunday against the Chargers. The long trip out west comes up tomorrow for the Bills. It's a 4:05 kickoff on Sunday, the Bills and Los Angeles, and we've got the game on the radio right here on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Were you shocked that he wasn't traveling out on Friday? I know they do a lot of research and this stuff. You know, did that shock you at all?
No. I mean, everybody does it differently. You know, actually, I talked with Sean McDermott about it today. Mm-hmm. He said we looked into that. He said because it's a 4 o'clock game, he said we just – and I think this might be the key to it. He said we just wanted – we wanted our players a chance to sleep at home tonight, Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I get that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's disruptive. You've done this. You played. But if you're in the hotel now for 2 nights – do you ever really, really
it's
get
different.
Comfortable?
It's
I don't
different.
Know what you do.
You know, it's Coach McDermott is a routine guy.
Yeah.
You know, he really talks about the process and trust the process. And part of the process is routine. And to me, the success, your success is in your routine, right? And so if you stick to that routine, then nothing changes. You know, you got to be able to adapt to change, but why change something if you don't, you know, you don't have to? Something like this. So it's not like they're playing a later game. You know, it's not like they're from the West Coast coming east. They're going west, right? So it's going to feel a little bit different to them. But you have guys like Lorenzo that we're going to have, you know, and they have their certain routine Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. This is what I do. Now if I got to fly out on Friday, that changes everything in my routine, and maybe that throws me off a little bit, you know. So we saw it. They talked about it in the Thursday night game. So Coach McDermott is big on routine, and that's why – he's probably known it this way.
Yeah. In fact, I just thought of that. Maybe that's part of it. I mean, I think all along the plan was to leave on Saturday, but maybe given the way the team played at the Meadowlands on the Thursday night game and the total disruption of the routine that week, maybe that went in. Part of that went into McDermott's decision to leave tomorrow, leave around midday tomorrow, and make sure you don't spend 2 nights in a hotel.
Right.
I think that might be the driving force there. And if, you know what? If they lose, somebody will second guess that. I think everybody knows that.
Oh, of course.
I was telling Coach McDermott today, we had a brief conversation about over the years, you know, people have handled it differently. Marv Levy had it down to a science. And actually, McDermott does too. I mean, they've consulted studies on this and body rhythms and body clocks. But Marv was a stickler for making sure he knew exactly what an early departure might mean and what kind of food to serve on the plane if you're traveling out west. You know, you don't want players up all night, you know, with caffeine or chocolate in their system. There's just a lot of wild stuff.
There's
a million different ways to do it.
There's a million different ways, and they have nutritionists on staff.
Yeah.
And these are the things that they get paid to do. You know, you get paid to think about we're traveling out west. So you got a 5-hour flight, maybe a 5.5-hour flight or something, like whatever it is. You know, what do these guys need to have on the plane so that they can get through this flight, and when we get there, they're not cramping up, and they're not, you know, they're good for the next day. They're good for Sunday's game. There's a lot that goes into the nutrition and, you know, traveling and all of that stuff. And really, not even if it was a home game, you know, this the things that they put into their bodies. I remember, you know, when Coach McDermott was first hired, you know, they had something like they couldn't have certain type of shakes anymore. You know how we have the juice shakes in the morning.
Right.
It's all smoothies. Fruit and stuff like that. You know, those smoothies, they couldn't have them like that. I remember walking in there and they only could have, you know, a certain amount of eggs, and it was crazy. You know, it's the science that goes behind this stuff is amazing, and they try to get it down to a T.
Yeah.
You know, but the interesting thing for me is everybody's body is different, you know? So how do you calculate everything for everybody's body? Because my body is different than, you know, Cordy Glenn's body. You know, Cordy Glenn might need 10 eggs in the morning.
Yeah, okay, I can see what you
mean. My body's different from a lot of especially from those big linemen. You know, they might need a little bit more, and the nutritionist's job is to find the right diet for everybody.
Right. Yep.
You know, that's what they get paid to do.
So, no, I'm not surprised. And like I said, I've seen a lot of different ways to do it, and in the end, it really doesn't matter. One more quick story. I'm not strolling down memory lane here, but I remember, I believe, as the Bills got ready to play in their 4th consecutive Super Bowl, and they had a week between games, and they had 2 weeks between games, and they had traveled early, they'd travel late. And I remember sitting around talking with Marv Levy and Bill Polian going into the 4th Super Bowl, and they were talking about that. Well, we tried it this way in Minnesota, and then we tried it this way in Pasadena, and then the first Super Bowl in Tampa we did this way. And they said, you know what? It really doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
If you win, then you did the right thing.
You did the right thing, right?
Yeah, he said, it doesn't matter. We can leave on Tuesday. We can leave on Saturday. We can leave. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't. You can make an argument to do anything you want as far as traveling to the West Coast.
Ultimately,
think we should go out. You know, you saw what the Patriots are doing, right, this week?
Yeah, they're in Colorado,
They're
right?
in Colorado because they're headed to Mexico City.
To Mexico City.
Yeah, and they played last week in Denver.
In Denver,
And they want to get used to the altitude. So
right,
I get that. You know?
Yeah, they think about this stuff way in advance. As soon as the schedule comes out, then it's like, okay, we have to go to L.A. We got to go to Mexico City. How do we – how do we do it?
Yeah.
You know, and then they have to talk to the nutritionist. Bill Belichick's been doing it for a while, but a guy like Coach McDermott, he's talking to a lot of different people to try to figure out what is the right way.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work out next year, all right, this way didn't work. We got to try it a different way.
Coach McDermott was asked about it today, and he talked about how he kind of leaned on some of what Andy Reid's routine was, which should not surprise everybody. You were on the Bills team that spent the week out west, right? Played a game on Sunday in San Francisco,
Sunday in Arizona. We stayed in Arizona for a week.
Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
How did that work? I mean, I know you won the Arizona game.
The Arizona game. It was tough. It was hard because we had to take everything. We had to work out there, you know, at the hotel. So we had to take, they had to get like a makeshift weight room and stuff like that.
Resort hotel there?
Yeah, at the resort hotel. We trained. We practiced at Arizona
ASU,
State. At ASU. So, you know, everything was different. We're in this locker room that nobody's ever been in. You know, we're practicing in their stadium, which was in the mountain, if you remember that. I don't know if you went out there to the practice, but – Everything was different. We were doing walkthroughs at the hotel at some random field out there by the hotel.
Yeah, they had a nice looking golf course right
there. Yeah, it was a nice looking golf course right there. It was a beautiful resort.
Yeah.
But the routine is so different now. I mean, when you're out there for a week, everything is different. You're trying to figure out, wait, which way is the cafeteria? Like, where do we eat? You know? It's a lot, you know. And then a lot of guys had their families out there as well. And so it's because you're out there for a week, and so, you know, when you have wife and kids and stuff, they want to come too. Can I come? Yeah. You know, you have your family out there. You're trying to make sure that they're okay. You still have practice. You want to go to – you might want to just go out to the mall and stuff like that. You know, we went out to the mall. It's a lot that goes into it, and there's a lot of planning that goes into this stuff.
Yeah. Well, so the Bills leave tomorrow, midday. We took a long time to get there, but that's the deal.
That's the deal.
You got the update on what's going on out here. Let's tell you what we want to talk about today, at least to get things started. And we do this typically on Fridays, spin it forward, look to the game. We know about the big upheaval at the quarterback spot. But we want to know from you, looking at this Chargers game, we talk about how important it is. What's the key to a Bills victory on Sunday? That is our Twitter poll, in fact. What is the key to a Buffalo Bills victory over the Chargers on Sunday? What do you think has to happen for the Bills to get the victory on Sunday? We put it up on Twitter a while ago. We got pretty good response in. 43% say the Bills need a balanced offensive attack to get the victory. 34% say stop the run. That makes sense after 298 yards on the ground last Sunday. 17% say handle Bosa and Ingram, handle the Chargers' pass rush. 6% have something else in mind. Give us your thoughts. What is the key in your mind to a Bills victory over the Chargers in Los Angeles on Sunday? Got the phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. If I'm voting, and I typically don't, but if I'm voting, I vote for balanced offensive attack, Donald. And this goes to Nathan Peterman, I think. I've said it. I've said it this week. I think Peterman, if he runs the passing offense efficiently, which we've seen him do, the ball comes out quickly. Mm-hmm. He gets it to receivers in stride. They pick up first downs. I'm not looking for the greatest show on turf here. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Marty Biron, on the way out of the hockey show, he asked us, is they going to light it up?
Or
are we
going to
have 40 times put it up? And I said, not unless they have to, and I don't think that's the plan. Right. I think the plan is for Peterman to have an efficient passing game, loosens up the box a little bit, and allows the Bills to do what we believe, hope, that they still do pretty well, and that's run the football. We haven't seen it consistently yet, but I think that's the key, a balanced offensive attack.
I think if I was going with the Twitter poll, I think I'd have to agree with you there. I think – and we talked so much about offense this week because they've switched the quarterback, you know. But on defense, I just want the team to tackle. You know, like it might not be a key to a game. It might be the key to the game. Just tackle. I just want to see them tackle, make sure tackles. Yeah, I want to see the turnovers, all of that stuff. But I just want the team to tackle. And for me, I think that would be my key to the game. If you tackle guys and not let them pick up an extra 4 or 5 yards, you can get off the field, you know, and get your offense back on the field. Because Nate Peterman is going to need some opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, he's a rookie. He's going to have some good and some bad throws. He's going to throw the ball around, and I hope that's going to help out with, you know, the running game and all of that stuff so that they're more balanced. But they need more and more opportunities. This defense has to get off the field. And ultimately, it just comes down to tackling. They have not been tackling the last couple of weeks, so I just want them to tackle this week.
All right, there you have our keys. What's your key? And if you can isolate one, that makes for a more interesting conversation, at least on Twitter, maybe not so much on the phone. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. What's the key to a victory over the Chargers this Sunday?
So we going with our keys here?
How about a call or two?
Oh, let's do that.
Want to do that?
Yeah.
John in Seattle. Hi, John.
I took one of your keys.
Hey, how's it going?
I know you did. I noticed. That's why I put a little distance between your pilfering my key and the actual discussion. John, I'm sorry. You've walked right into a little intramural dispute here. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
Time, Bills.
John? Sam? What? Maybe we should go to the keys here. Are you still there, John? You're on the air, by the way. Okay, John. Let's go to Tom in West Seneca. Hi, Tom.
It's those Johns, man.
Hi, John. Hi, Don. Thanks for having me on. On the Twitter poll, I couldn't agree more. A balanced offensive attack. And, John, I agree 100% with you. This is a must-win game. And also, Don, I agree with you about the team looking in the mirror analogy. That would be a good stunt. And also, this is a good game for Peterman because without Philip Rivers, I most certainly give us a better shot at beating the Chargers.
I think Philip Rivers is going to play, Tom. I think that's the plan out there.
Yeah. And lastly, I think Coach McDermott put it in one sentence pretty good the other day. We are better than a 5-4 team, and I believe we're going to win.
Okay. He said we want to be better than a 5-4 team.
He said, I'm here to be better.
Here to be better than 5-4.
Yeah.
That's the quote of the week, maybe one of the big quotes of the year.
Year.
Depending on how this plays out.
Exactly. You're going to go back. I mean, it's still going to be the quote of the year, but it can be looked at two different ways.
Huge.
You know, he wanted to be better, and he got better than 5-4. He wanted to be better. It didn't work out that
right.
way. You know, so we'll see at the end of the year how this thing plays out.
Let's go to Brad in Allentown. Hello, Brad. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. Is that Allentown?
You know, first of all, I was in my friend group. I was like the biggest Tyrod fan right to the end. And I still am. I think he's a great guy. He's a competitor. He's got tremendous skills. But I was at that game on Sunday, and I noticed kind of in some finality a throw that he can't make that an NFL quarterback has to make.
Which one?
So I'm thinking that McDermott made the switch because he thinks that Peterman gives us a better chance to win now.
Yeah. Brett,
what
throw in mind? Can you identify the play?
Yeah, it's he doesn't get on top of the ball and stick it down low when he needs to. The play in this game was a play to the sidelines. It was a third and maybe 12, and it was to the right sideline. And we had the guy on the break, but he needed to stick it down like about 2 feet in front of the chain at about thigh high, you know, and it sailed on him.
Mm.
I've seen him do that before. The most famous one for me was I think it was the first game last year. I think we were playing New England at home, and
Baltimore. He
came on a left, a bootleg left, and Clay was open about a yard into the end zone, but he had boxed out the guy behind him, and Tyrod let that ball sail. You know, I know it's hard to make go into your left to make that throw as a righty, but you got to stick it in there thigh high, and, you know, he didn't. So, you know, an NFL quarterback's got to make that throw. So for me, that was a deciding point. And I think that, McDermott saw, you know, something similar to that and just said, hey, we got to get this guy, we need an NFL thrower in there.
Okay. Don, what do you think of that?
I mean, there have been a lot of throws that you want to see Tyrod make, you know.
And throwing it down the field, you know. But look, that said, I think that I disagree with some of the talk conversation that says that if Peterman comes in, we got a big problem. You know, he's probably going to have trial and error going on, and I think we should utilize Tyrod still. He's, you know, it's everybody's on the team. You know, why not put in some Wildcat packages for Tyrod and like everybody's, you know, flat out doing what they do best.
What do you think of that, Don?
You know, somebody tweeted that to me earlier this week, and I don't see why not. You know, I mean, it's not like you're putting a running back in there. You throw it to Tyrod, and he can run it. Throw it to him, he can throw it. You know, I mean, now you put your backup quarterback at risk, because now he is technically the backup quarterback. And you put him at risk. But, you know, maybe you want to dial something up, throw it out there, and let him throw it down the field.
You know, the caller made a point about throws that Tyrod can't make, sticking it down in there, and that's a point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our buddy Andy Benoit from MMQBSI.com, mm-hmm. the guy who lives out in Boise, great guest.
Is that where he lives?
Yeah.
Wow.
Breaking down film out in the cabin in Boise.
Yeah, right.
Charlie does break down film.
Eat potatoes. Break down film.
He tweeted this out this week, and I think we all knew it, and many of us felt it, but he kind of captured what went on here with Tyrod being benched. Andy Benoit, this was the other day. Bills had no choice. Stats can never measure throws that are open but not attempted. Tyrod has too many of those for an offense to be consistent.
That's it.
Bingo.
That's
right?
That is it.
And it's not measured on the stat sheet. And all these national outside Buffalo observers, entitled to their own opinion, who's pull these crazy theories out of thin air about why this went down, why the quarterback changed, are looking at stats. Yeah, Tyrod's got a really decent completion percentage and doesn't throw interceptions. And, you know, he had nothing really to do. I mean, he couldn't help out stop the Saints' ground game the other day. And I get all that, and that's all true. But as Andy Benoit said, you can't measure the throws that are open but not attempted, not even completed.
And that's the truth.
And that's the play I was thinking about, I've talked about all week.
You can't measure it. And anybody, if you're not watching the Bills every week and, you know, breaking down the Bills film, then, you know, you wouldn't know what is truly going on here in Buffalo. You wouldn't know that, man, they got guys open. All you're going to do is look up the stats and say, man, he was 74% in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was this in that game. How could they pull him? You know, well, maybe it's this. No, it's not that at all. Tyrod was not. He wasn't making throws that you need your quarterback to make. He wasn't taking enough chances that you need your quarterback to take. He wasn't giving his guys, the wide receivers, an opportunity to make plays for him.
Yeah.
And that's as a quarterback. Look, the best quarterbacks in the league today, the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady's, Drew Brees, they give their receivers opportunities to make plays. And how many times do you see a throw that's off the mark? Drew Brees last week had a couple of throws to his wide receivers where they went up. Thomas would go up high and catch that ball in the middle of the field, you know?
Yeah.
But he gave him an opportunity. You got to give these guys an opportunity. And if you're not doing that as the quarterback, because you're never going to have guys wide open. It's rare that you have guys wide open. So if you're not able to see it and throw it, even though there's some guys in there, the offense doesn't – you don't give them an opportunity to make plays. How many times – over the last couple of weeks, did we say, man, if you just had somebody make the big play, maybe it could get the team rolling in the right direction. Well, your quarterback wasn't allowing for anybody to make the big play, you know, because he wasn't giving the guys the opportunities. It's not all on him.
Right.
It's not all on him. The offensive line wasn't blocking. But at the end of the day, to play that position, the quarterback position, you have to pull the trigger.
It's like having a six-cylinder car with, like, five cylinders working in one of them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You'll get, I guess, eventually to where you're going, but it might be a little bit ugly, you know, and
right.
It's certainly not efficient. We'll see if it works. I don't know if it'll work. Really eager to talk to Greg Cosell about this at 1 o'clock because he always talks about Tyrod as, what, a system quarterback, and
yeah.
I wonder if he thinks Nathan is the same thing. Eager to talk about Mark Kelso about it as well. And Nathan Peterman, eager to see how he plays on Sunday. This morning when he met with the media, Bills head coach Sean McDermott was asked that. How has Peterman looked during the practice week so far?
You know, he prepares. You know, the great part about our guys is they prepare every week like they're the starters, even though they may not be because they know they're one snap away. And when you prepare that way, when your name is called, you're ready to go. And you've seen that over the course of our season already with different guys that have stepped in and stepped up. Nathan, no different. He's prepared all season long like he's the starter, and that's what you have to do. And so he's had a great week. He looks sharp and crisp, and we've had a great week as a team.
How has the rhythm with his wide receivers and his targets come about this week, just from what you've seen? It seemed like Sunday when you got in there, he threw a quick pass to Kelvin, and it kind of just bounced off his hands. It's probably a catch he usually makes, but maybe he's not used to Nathan's a zip or anything like that. So I guess the rhythm with his wide receivers this week, has that progressed in a good enough direction, you think?
It has. It has. You know, obviously, you know, he has not had the time – maybe that Tyrod had up to this point with some guys. Now other guys he's had more time, in fact, with. So he's thrown a number of balls through practice up to this point in time with these receivers, and I'm confident in, you know, the more opportunities he gets, the more comfortable they'll get together.
Sean McDermott, and what else do you expect him to say, right? Yeah, I mean, Tyrod or Nathan's had a week of practice here. I'm sure there have been ups and downs in the practice week, too. But I do think they have a pretty good sense of what they're going to get from him, right? And a pretty good sense of what to expect when they get to the game, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think we all know what to – we don't know what to expect in terms of, you know, completions and all that stuff. We know, you know, how he plays the game, you know, and I think they know that as well. Just from watching him in practice, watching him in the preseason, watching him in playing the game last week. It's going to be interesting, though, because now it's a total different ball game. You're the starter. You are the guy that everybody is looking to, you know. So how do you handle being that guy? When you come in the huddle, the first play that he comes in the huddle, everybody in that huddle is going to be looking in his eyes to see, is he going to take command of this huddle? Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to do it in practice, but now it's game time, you know, and how does he take command of this huddle? Does he look nervous? You know, guys, think about all of this stuff, like, uh-oh, he looks nervous. I remember Fitz would always come in. He would joke and stuff, you know, and that kind of just eased everybody. Let's see how he comes in this huddle. It's not something that we would ever know unless we talk to one of the players. They're always going to say he's, you know, he's confident and everything. Yeah. But those guys are looking to him in that huddle to see how he's handling it.
First NFL starts Sunday, 4:05 p.m. Eastern for Nathan Peterman. The weather forecast for Sunday calls for sunshine and clouds mixed in Carson, California. High 73. The winds will be out of the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. And John Perry is your referee for the Bills and the Los Angeles Chargers coming up on Sunday. When we come back, Mark Kelso joins us, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, to break down the game from his vantage point, what to expect from Nathan Peterman. You're welcome to join us as well on the phone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We're just getting started here, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Hello, those of you listening on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Those tuned in on the simulcast on MSG. Donald's laughing because Coach Kelso and I are conducting a little business before we bring him on the air. What, we have to get arrangements down, Donald.
I know. It's just always funny when you guys are trying to figure out what time you're going to pick him up.
Yeah.
And the time that he says is usually a lot different than the time that you say.
He likes to cut it a little. He likes to shave it a little closer than I do. But that's the former player in him. I know they will leave without me. Mark Kelso's on the line with us right now. Right, Mark? I've told you that story. They will leave without me. And you know what, Mark? With all due respect, they'd probably leave without you right now, too, if you're late.
Without question. Without question, buddy.
Good to have you here, Mark. Mark's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline to talk about Sunday's game, the Bills and the Chargers. Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, joining us. All right, Mark, recreate the scene for me. It's Wednesday morning, about 9:30. You're down there at Charlotte at your racing team. You got a lug wrench in your hand, and you hear the news that Tyrod's out and Nathan Peterman's in. What did you think? Did you drop the wrench immediately? What happened?
I did, and I had a few holy craps. What the heck's going on over there at One Bills Drive? But they have shown that they're going to be decisive in trying to move the team forward. It doesn't matter what I think or what my opinion is. I mean, you've got to be willing to deal with the consequences of the change. And Tyrod, I think, probably said it pretty appropriately when he said, I don't agree with the change, obviously, because he wants to play, but I'm going to support my teammates. I would think nothing less of I would have expected that, I should say, from Tyrod, because he's a tremendous leader and a guy that is a team-first guy. But certainly there's some disappointment there, and I don't think the troubles certainly did not all lie with Tyrod Taylor, and because of the lack of offensive production, and some of them perhaps, but thought that he had been playing pretty well the last two games withstanding, and it was surprising, certainly, yeah, after what they said on Sunday after the game, and then Monday when they reiterated that situation, and then came back with we continue to reevaluate. But they've demonstrated that they're going to do what they believe is in the best interest of moving the team forward to become a consistent winner, and I guess they feel this is the next step.
Hey, Mark, you've had a chance to see Nathan Peterman play in the preseason. You've had a chance to see him play last week. What does he bring to this team?
Yeah, and played in some situations, and not to discredit the quality work that he did in the preseason or last week, but last week was in a time when the Saints defensive unit was just trying to manage the game and make sure they didn't give up any big quick plays. And so although Nathan played well, you take that a little bit less seriously because of the position they were in and maybe being a little less aggressive than they would typically be in that situation. The preseason, he's playing against some really good talent, but a lot of guys that are on the streets now. So, again, you need to just take it all in, see what his body of work is. The thing that I think I really like about the young man is he seems very decisive. He's very poised. I think I've heard Murph say before, he demonstrates a maturity for a young guy. It seems a little bit rare. And a guy that it seems like he'll do everything he needs to do to try to move the team forward. He's more of a pocket type passer than perhaps Tyrod would be. And he seems like he can throw across the middle, which are some things that I think were limitations of Tyrod's skill set, although he could manage around those type things and still be a very effective quarterback. But I think the team will rally around behind him. I mean, it's going to be difficult for Tyrod to go out there for the coin toss and then have to go back and stand on the sidelines. But I think he'll do everything that he believes he can do to support Nathan Peterman in starting role.
With Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, as he joins us from his other job today. He's going to call the game with us on Sunday out in Los Angeles. Mark, what does from a passing game standpoint and from an overall offensive standpoint, what do you think this offense will look like with Peterman in there as compared to Tyrod Taylor?
Well, I had a little bit more drop back, certainly. I hope that there's some – I mean, I think there's some things that they could have accomplished here in recent weeks that I'm not sure. Sometimes they obviously studied the game plan tremendously, and they know what they believe will be effective on game day. But the screen game is a play offensively that has been noticeably absent from the scheme that they've tried to employ in recent weeks. And LeSean, when he gets the ball in his hand, is just fantastic in the open space. So you'd like to be able to do that. And I know they've tried to get the ball in LeSean's hands, but across the line of scrimmage as opposed to behind. They've done it a couple times, but not with any regularity. And run the screen with the tight ends a little bit more favorably run with Charles Clay, and you haven't had him available for a few weeks. But I'm hoping that there's some more movement. I'm hoping with the young guy that they say, okay, we're gonna engage a little bit of three-step drop. We're gonna make sure we're flooding an area, whether we're flooding the middle, which he seems like he has good sight lines, or we're flooding the outside, because one of those guys is going to be open. And particularly with the game this week, I mean, this team is a heavy man defensive team, and there's some opportunities I think against this team because of the distribution of those defensive backs. So they're going to need to get the ball out quick because they've got some guys on the edge who can really rush even when they only bring four. And I think they got to give them an opportunity to be successful. And sometimes that means the screen game. That means the step-back screen game. Or that means, again, getting the ball out quickly to receivers that are going to be open just beyond the line of scrimmage and manage it like a running game, actually, a short passing game maintains the same effect as a running game.
Hey, Mark, what do you expect to see from this defense? You got a fifth-round rookie quarterback coming in a big situation for this Bills team. You got a Chargers defense that gets after the passer, the second in the league in sacks. They play aggressive, like you said. They play a lot of man, but do you see them try to confuse him, blitz him a lot? Do you see them try to maybe sit back in coverage and say, can you beat the coverage?
Yeah, no, I expected to pressure him. I mean, the book on most young quarterbacks is if you pressure them, they're going to make mistakes, and you're going to force them to throw balls that are contested and balls that have an opportunity to be turned over. And I would suspect that that's what they would do. I mean, they're an aggressive defensive unit. They fly around. They try to bring – they don't necessarily need to bring a ton of pressure because they've got Bosa and Ingram coming off the edge, and those two guys both have really – very formidable pass rushes and kind of a different style. Bosa is more of a hand slapper, and then he uses his arm extension to get around you, and then Ingram's a little bit quicker on the outside and has a really good inside move. Sometimes they'll bring some pressure, but not real often. But they're playing man coverage on the back end, and they're coming to the line of scrimmage, and they're taking those backs and taking the air out of those backs coming from the backfield, which is a good thing to do as well. But I think there's a lot of opportunities here for the Bills with some pre-snap movement and stack situations and put them in cluster situations that creates a little bit of confusion at the line of scrimmage for the defensive back unit of the Chargers, and then gives some early opportunities for Peterman to make a decision. And that's the thing that I think one of his best qualities as a young quarterback, it seems as if he's really decisive. And once he sees a guy open, he is not afraid to throw it in.
Hey, Mark, I have trouble figuring out the Los Angeles Chargers. You know, their season obviously started out pretty poorly. What, four straight losses? They won three in a row. They've lost two in a row. It's like the pieces don't add up to, you know, what they should. I keep going back to when I watched a couple of games from the Chargers this week. They just play sloppy. It's almost like if they just tie up a few loose ends, they'd be a little bit better, maybe considerably better than 3-6. What do you see?
Yeah, I can't disagree with that sentiment, John. It's just they look like a team that's better than their record, and,
yeah,
and a team that has a quarterback who's, if you look at his numbers compared to Tom Brady and Drew Brees, I mean, his numbers are pretty close to those guys. I think he throws for 7 yards per completion or per attempt. I mean, and those guys are throwing for 8, but he gets the ball out really quickly. I mean, he can do some really good things at the quarterback position. They've got Gordon at running back, who's more of a one-cut guy, but brings some power and some acceleration to that position. And they've got some guys behind him as well, in Brandon Oliver and the young rookie out of West Colorado.
There. Yeah, Eckler.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Eckler is his name. But he's a little bit elusive. He's got that really compact body at 5'9" and almost 200 pounds and can take a hit and keep on going. It demonstrated some really good contact balance. They've got great weapons on the outside, and I think they have the opportunity to score a lot more points than they've been scoring, but they didn't seem like they've had a lot of rhythm to the offense particularly, and then sometimes Phillip's throwing the ball down there and they're not able to make the reception. So I think it's a combination of a number of things, but they certainly have a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the football. They got great speed, and then they've got, I mean, Keenan Allen becomes a guy that's his go-to guy in critical situations. Mike Williams is just starting to emerge, and I guess, with the injury he had coming into training camp. So he's just starting to emerge as one of his targets, but he's got guys that can just fly. Travis Benjamin is going to get loose at one point, and you better defend him deep or Phillip Rivers will try to go downtown.
Mark, the one guy that you didn't mention, I think anybody who's been watching football for the last 12 years plus would know Antonio Gates. What do you see out of him? Does he still have a lot left in the tank? Is he still getting it done out there?
He still gets it done in certain situations, more package situations. I mean, Hunter Henry, honestly, guys, has been more of a target for Phillip Rivers this year than Antonio Gates has. I think he still has the ability to post guys up. Still think he's a favorable target in the red area down the seam because he's got that big body, and Phillip Rivers can thread it a little bit in a tight window. But it seems that, I mean, Antonio Gates is another guy, I mean, that probably will garner a lot of votes for the Hall of Fame and with the great career that he's had, but it doesn't seem like he's been as big a part of this offensive package as he certainly has been over his 15-year career, and a fantastic career. But it seems like Hunter Henry is a guy that's getting more minutes in the games that I saw anyway. He's getting more minutes than Antonio Gates, but what a great player he is. And anytime the guy has had that kind of career, you never can underestimate what their ability is in a critical situation.
It's a really interesting game, Mark, and it was made even more interesting with the Bills quarterback move. I look forward to being out there Sunday in Carson, California, to call this game. Thanks for being on the show with us here today.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, guys. Yeah, hopefully it'll go favorably for the Bills as opposed to the last couple of weeks.
Cool.
But they've got to fix a few things. I suspect that they've done some real good work this week to accomplish that goal.
Hope you're right.
Mark, I hope you guys get your whole timing thing down. You know, there's no big arguments on what time you want to get to the airport over what time Murph wants to get there.
Timing. I thought you were talking about the race car. You're getting into the race car mode on it.
Mark, just reaching down to pick up the lug wrench to get back to work. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. Okay, guys, have a great afternoon.
Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, also part of the JTG Doherty race team down in Carolina, and they're getting ready to have their race in Homestead, Florida this weekend.
Homestead?
Yeah. You got a question?
I was about to ask you, because the season is coming to an end.
I think this
here.
Is it.
Yeah.
I think. I don't follow
the championship? Like
yeah.
Last
yeah.
race? Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for joining us. Mark Kelso, he joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Back with more. I want to get more thoughts from you. Your keys to the Bills-Chargers matchup when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Bills hit the road tomorrow. They go out west to play the Chargers on Sunday. But there's football here at New Era Field tomorrow afternoon at 2. It is the championship game in the Monsignor Martin League. Canisius Joes, who else, right? 2 o'clock at New Era Field. And tickets are still available. They'll be available at the Bills ticket office starting at noon on Saturday tomorrow. If you can't make it, though, we've got the broadcast of the game, Canisius Joes, streaming live at onebuffalo.com and at the New Era Field Facebook page. Donald, you all set for that game? You got your fourth and final high school broadcast of the year tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the game. I'm hoping that St. Joe's can bounce back from the last game that they played against each other. There were a lot of fans there from both schools. Mm-hmm. But the St. Joe's fan base was a little bit quiet in that game. It got ugly quickly. And I think, if I recall, it might have been even the first play of the game, you know, where Canisius went for like a 60-yard touchdown right up the gut. So I'm hoping that Casey Kelly and that St. Joe's offense can get it going, stay on the field, keep Canisius' offense off the field, score some points and make this a good game. And then maybe they can squeak one out at the end. We'll see how it plays out, though.
First thing, when you get to the stadium tomorrow, do me a favor. When they flick on the scoreboard, make sure that 47-7 scores, 47-10
yeah,
scores
right.
off.
Like, oh,
nobody
wow,
wants to see that. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
Here's a call from Joe in North Tonawanda. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Okay.
Aren't football weekends great now that these games mean something, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, here's some keys to the game I got here. You know, controlling the line of scrimmage, getting back to going.
It's a good key.
What's got us winning, even on both sides of the ball, and getting off on those big third downs.
Another big key.
Caught up like that in the beginning of the year on, you know, those big third downs. We were getting off the field, pressuring for turnovers, controlling that line of scrimmage, and that's going to be key for Peterman coming into the game. You know, taking some of that pressure off of him and that offensive line, really putting a push out there on the road, controlling the ball, controlling the clock, getting that running game going.
Yeah.
Speaking of that running game, where is Banyard been? I'm
he's not on the roster right now.
And why aren't they running this kid? He's one heck of a talent.
He's not on the roster. He's been on and off the roster.
Yeah.
The guy that you are likely to see is the guy just signed a week ago, Travis Cadet. Because of the injury to Tolbert. And I'm eager to see that. Cadet, though, we had him on the show, has been used mostly as a receiver.
Yeah. You know, and that can be a plus. You know, he can help out. You can put him in the slot, maybe outside. You know, he can catch the ball out of the backfield as well. You know, he's been used mostly that way. He probably can run up the middle as well. I'm interested to see what he gives this team and as how is he as a complement to LeSean McCoy, but Joe in North Tonawanda, as he was talking about controlling the line of scrimmage, that is big in this game. You know, on offense, it's huge because you got a defensive line or defensive front that has 29 sacks, a defense that has 29 sacks on the season, and they're two edge rushers. Joey Bosa has like 9.5, and Melvin Ingram on the other side has like 8.5. You know, so these two guys get after the quarterback. They complement each other very well. They flip-flop him every now and then. Usually, Joey Bosa lines up on the right side. He'll line up over Jordan Mills, and Ingram will be on the other side. But then all of a sudden, they'll flip-flop those guys, and then they'll run some stunt or something like that. And, you know, there are a lot of plays where Ingram will get there first and put pressure, and then Joey Bosa comes and cleans it up, you know.
Yeah.
So this offensive line, they better come ready to play, you know, in the passing game and the running game. I know Peterman wants to get the ball out of his hands quickly, but they get there the second fastest in the league to the quarterback.
Yeah.
So they need for this offensive line to hold up against this Chargers defensive front.
I was just thinking about Gus Bradley, the Chargers defensive coordinator, who's got a plan probably worked on starting maybe even last weekend. Here's what we're going to do against Tyrod Taylor, Joey, and Ingram. We're going to rush wide. We're going to keep him in the pocket. We're going to contain him.
Then all
the news
sudden,
comes out 9:30 Wednesday morning, and he goes to the paper shredder and goes,
rush him.
Here's what we're going to do. Yeah, right?
rush him.
Go after him. Sick him, basically.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, interesting. All right, we've got a lot more to talk about, and Greg Cosell will join us coming up in just a minute or two. He is the executive producer and analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN. We'll get his thoughts on the Bills quarterback switch and some of the other matchups in the league. Greg Cosell, when we return, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills. Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills have wrapped up their heavy work of the practice week. They'll walk through tomorrow before leaving for Los Angeles. Looks like kicker Steven Hauschka should be ready to go. Moving in the right direction, he should be okay. That's what Sean McDermott said this morning. No practice today for left tackle Cordy Glenn with his foot and ankle. He is probably trending towards missing another game. No practice for running back Mike Tolbert with his hamstring. He probably will miss as well. The Bills leave tomorrow for L.A. Bills and Chargers, 4.05 p.m. kickoff. You can hear the broadcast here on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Chargers coach Anthony Lynn, who was offensive coordinator and interim head coach here last year, says the Chargers got to keep in mind they may see Tyrod Taylor in this game on Sunday, believe it or not. Anthony Lynn says if Taylor suits up, we have to be ready for him in case it goes south for Nathan Peterman. That's what Anthony Lynn told the media in L.A. yesterday. Larry Fitzgerald has signed a one-year contract extension with the Arizona Cardinals, keeping the veteran wide receiver through the 2018 season. He's 34 years old in his 14th NFL season. He ranks in the top 10 in the league in receptions and in yards. The Cardinals 4-5 this season. They play at Houston on Sunday. Ben Roethlisberger threw four touchdown passes as Pittsburgh hammered the Tennessee Titans 40-17, and many of those targets went to Antonio Brown. He caught 10 of them for 144 yards and three scores. NFL owners meet December 13th in Irving, Texas. At that time, an owners-only session will deal with the impending extension for Commissioner Roger Goodell. The session was scheduled after Cowboys owner Jerry Jones requested a special meeting. That request was denied, but they will talk about it on December 13th. Sabres game day. They're in Detroit to play the Red Wings tonight. Second time they play this season at Little Caesars Arena. The Sabres' first visit to Detroit's new building. The game starts at 7:30 tonight. Sabres at Detroit. And a big NBA game last night. The Boston Celtics came from behind to win their 14th straight. They beat the defending champion Warriors 92-88. This is the John Murphy Show, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. And joining us right now on the line, the analyst, executive producer of NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films, Greg Cosell, our regular Friday guest. Greg, John Murphy and Donald here. Thanks very much for joining us.
Murph, Donald, quiet week at One Ooh. Buffalo Studio. Nothing going on?
It's never quiet here. Every couple of weeks we get a reboot. And were the Bills in line for an offensive reboot from what you've been seeing, what you've been seeing of this team on video, Greg? What do you think?
Well, I don't know how you guys feel, but and you're there every day. I'm not, but it makes me wonder because I think everybody knows what Tyrod Taylor is as a quarterback, the kind of player he is. So I guess a part of me wonders if this was something they'd been thinking about for a while and they thought this was just the time to do it based on where they stand in their season and that it had been kind of in the works for, a number of weeks.
Hey, Greg, what's your evaluation of Tyrod Taylor as a quarterback? I know we've talked about this in the past, but can you just tell us again, what's your evaluation of him and how had he played, as of late?
Well, I think he has good moments. He's part, ultimately, for him to be successful over time, and this is hard to do in the NFL, I think he needs to be part of a multidimensional offense in which the run game is consistent on a week-to-week basis, in which the defense performs at a relatively high level on a week-to-week basis, and he becomes a complementary piece of a team, not just an offense, in which you can use him as part of your run game, in which you can limit the number of dropbacks, in which you don't have to ask him to make a lot of difficult long yardage throws because that's not the strength of his game. Now, as I said, in the NFL, there are weeks you can do that. It's difficult to do that week after week after week. And a game like last week against New Orleans, now that game was not solely on Tyrod Taylor, as we know, but that's a game that showcases in some ways his limitations and the limitations of the offense. This offense is not set up to throw the ball with volume, either because of the offensive line or Tyrod Taylor. So I think the passing game, and by extension Tyrod, gets exposed.
This offense, many believe, with Rick Dennison, is has West Coast principles, West Coast concepts. Yeah. Is Peterman better suited than Tyrod Taylor was to execute those concepts?
I would say for sure. I watched 7 games of Nathan Peterman at Pitt last year, 7 full games, not just highlights. And I thought there was a lot to like about the way he plays, his poise, his refinement. He did play a lot under center. He throws with anticipation, with accuracy. The question that people had with him, and I remember talking to a number of people about him, very few people didn't like the way he played. The issue for a lot of people was arm strength. Was it below the level at which you can succeed in the NFL? So that's an open question, because smart, reasonable people in the NFL differed on that question. I'll tell you the player, and both you guys will remember this player, it's not that long ago, who I kind of thought maybe down the road he could be like Murph, was Trent Green. Trent Green, back in the day when they had more rounds in the draft than they do now, was an eighth round draft choice, didn't get his chance until he'd been in the league for a while, and then in a very well-schemed offense in Kansas City, ended up having a really nice, what, 5 or 6 years or so, and was a very nice NFL quarterback without a big arm.
Right. Now, Greg, as you talk about him not having a big arm, that was his not coming out of college. Is it because he's not making the big, you know, 60-yard throws down the field, or are you not seeing the zip on the ball on normal routes that he needs to have?
I would say, Donald, it's more zip on the ball. Arm strength to me, and I've talked to people about this, that's not a function of how far you can throw it, because even throws like fades, those are not arm strength throws. So it's not arm strength throws have a lot more to do with when you're throwing, let's say, dig routes at, you know, at 18 yards where you've got to stick it in there in a tight window and the ball has to get there with some juice. Or if you're throwing an out route, the ball has to get there. So those are really velocity throws. We're not talking about, you know, winding up and throwing it 50 yards down the field.
We're on the line with Greg Cosell, analyst, executive producer of NFL Matchup. You can see it tomorrow, 8:30 a.m. on ESPN2, Sunday, 6:30 a.m. on ESPN. Greg, this question of anticipation throws, we had a guest on the other day, a former college colleague of Nathan Peterman, who highlighted, he said he is a great anticipation thrower.
He is.
I wonder if we're going from maybe what was Tyrod Taylor's weakness to Nathan Peterman, maybe this is his strength. Is that fair to say?
I think it's one of his strengths for sure. He plays with a great sense of timing, anticipation. I mean, you saw him in college line up under center and throw the skinny post or the bang eight, a throw you never see in college with all these spread shotgun offenses, and he did that. And we see that throw in the NFL. That's an anticipation throw. It's a timing throw. You have to hit your back foot off a five-step drop, shift your weight, deliver the football. He can make those kinds of throws that fit NFL offenses. And the other factor is Rick Dennison's background, which you guys are very familiar with, so we won't go into all those details, but I think ultimately his offense, based on his background, starts with the quarterback under center, and he would like his pass game then to work with the quarterback starting under center.
Hey, Greg, how much does, you know, the way Nathan Peterman plays the game, how much does that help this offensive line that has been struggling, especially as they go out to Los Angeles to play a defensive front that gets to the passer a lot?
That's a tough assignment. We can get to that in a sec. But I think your question, Donald, is anytime a quarterback plays with a fairly refined and subtle, nuanced sense of timing and rhythm, it always helps your offensive line. Because if you're going to do, let's say, a five-step drop and the ball comes out, the pass rush is not going to get there. The timing and structure of the play beats the pass rush. So I think that they're hoping that Nathan Peterman, with the way in which he plays, that it helps all facets of the passing game.
Some of us, Greg, are wondering, hoping, I guess, that Nathan Peterman and, you know, his effectiveness in running a passing game, at least a viable passing game, might help the wildly inconsistent Buffalo run game, which is kind of their bread and butter and hasn't produced.
Yeah, and that's been an issue. And, of course, unfortunately, Tyrod Taylor has borne the brunt of that because this is a run game that they anticipated being the starting point, the foundation of their offense, and in some ways the foundation of their team, with the ability to control pace and tempo in games and maybe limit the number of snaps the defense plays. But that has not been the case. There's been a few exceptions here and there. They certainly had a good starting drive last week. But for the most part, the run game has not been consistent drive to drive, week to week, and that's been a concern.
Greg, you've got these seven Nathan Peterman Pitt games that you've watched. I'm guessing that Gus Bradley and the defensive deep thinkers out in L.A. have watched some of those as well. What do you think they think, and how do you think they might scheme against Nathan Peterman in his first NFL start?
Well, this is a little different defense with Gus Bradley than maybe many are used to seeing. I think the initial thought, if you're familiar with the NFL, is that Gus Bradley, it's cover three, and it's somewhat predictable. Right. They rush four. They still predominantly rush four, but they play a little more man coverage than people might think. They do have an outstanding nickel down four. You have Bosa, you have Ingram. They bring in Chris McCain, who's a long, lanky, good pass rusher. They move people around. There's a lot more different front looks than you might expect. I think they're going to rely on their pass rush, and I think they'll selectively pressure, depending on down and distance situations, to see how both the O-line of the Bills handles it and how Nathan Peterman handles it, because the speed of the game in the NFL, with pressures in particular, is a totally different animal than the college game.
Yeah, there's an old adage, right? Or maybe I got it mixed up, but isn't it like pressure the young quarterbacks and you know, play coverage against the veterans? Or do I have that totally mixed up?
Yeah, I mean, no. I think a lot of people believe that, that with younger quarterbacks, what you're trying to do is get them to play much faster physically because they're not ready to play fast mentally. So if you make them speed up physically, they're not going to be able to process or isolate the right receiver quickly enough. So you want to speed them up.
Hey, Greg, I think we expect for Phillip Rivers to play in this game. What have you seen out of Phillip Rivers in this Chargers offense this year?
You know, Donald, I've always loved Phillip Rivers, and I've watched tape this year, and I don't think he's ever had a gun, but he's always had a strong enough arm. And I think his arm strength is not quite what it was, and he's just played a lot of games, a lot of years. There's a lot of wear and tear on that arm. I don't think the ball's quite coming out the same way. And I think they've not been able to get their run game going with any consistency either. Melvin Gordon has not been able to run well. And Gordon, to me, is an interesting kind of runner. I think he's a momentum runner. I think he needs space at the point of attack. I don't think he's a confined space runner. I don't think he's a laterally agile runner. I think he's a downhill runner who needs room and space.
We're with Greg Cosell, analyst, executive producer for NFL Matchup on ESPN. He'll be on there this weekend. We talk to him every Friday. I want to move you around the league a little bit, Greg, and ask you about last night's game and the offensive explosion from Ben Roethlisberger. Most of it headed towards Antonio Brown. It seems like every time you try to find a chink in the Steelers' armor, they come up with a game like that. Pretty impressive, I think, the points they put up and maybe what it bodes for the future. What did you think?
Yeah, well, they've got a lot of talent on offense. They've been up and down as far as consistency. It was interesting what they chose to do last night. They'd really been a Le'Veon Bell team prior to last night in their approach. And last night, their approach was, let's go no huddle. Let's put the game in Ben's hands and let him control the game at the line of scrimmage and throw the football. And that's what they did. And I'll tell you what surprised me, because I watch Tennessee every week on tape, is what Tennessee did is they, after the first series, they lined up the rookie, Adoree Jackson, and matched him up on Antonio Brown for pretty much for the rest of the game. And obviously Brown had a big game, but that was a little different approach for Pittsburgh than in recent weeks. They put this game in Ben's hands.
Now, on the flip side of it, Marcus Mariota did not play a good game. I mean, do they still believe in Marcus Mariota? He's had sort of a tough season. What do you think about him out there in Tennessee?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you ask about him, because I think so much is we think about that a lot, particularly in our matchup room here, about what Marcus Mariota is at this point in his career. I think the Titans' offensive issues start, Donald, with an inability to run the ball. Their entire offense and team, to some degree, is built on their ability to run the football. Last year, they were dynamic running the ball. This year, they've not been very good at all. And I think that their pass game is not a standalone pass game. So when they can't run the ball, I think they've got all kinds of problems. And that's shown up in a number of games this year.
Greg, let me take you to another team anyway, the Rams, the surprising Rams, and they're matched up against the Vikings on Sunday, a couple of 7-2 teams. What will it take for Minnesota or maybe somebody down the line to slow down the Los Angeles Rams, what they've been able to do offensively this year?
Yeah, this game, Murph, to me is really intriguing, because I got to tell you, and when I sit and watch tape, and you know, I sit with a clicker, and of course everybody's a genius when you can go back 10 times, but I watch Minnesota's secondary and their defense. I go back and forth over and over again, because their secondary, they do a great job with different looks, with disguise. There's a lot of hybrid look, zone man concepts on the same play. And if I'm sitting here, you know, in 5 minutes playing with my remote and trying to figure it out, and Jared Goff has to figure this out in real time. I'm not suggesting he won't figure it out, mm-hmm. but I, to me, this is the toughest challenge that Jared Goff will face up to this point of the season.
What, when you look at the Rams, did McVay come in there and tailor an offense around Goff, or is it the other way around? Did he just happen to have an offense that is tailored to the stuff that Jared Goff is comfortable with?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, Murph, because to me, McVay's offense works for almost any quarterback, particularly a quarterback whose game is pretty much built on playing within structure, which theoretically every quarterback's game should be built that way. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think his concepts are really good. I mean, he's taken concepts from the Saints. He's taken concepts from the Patriots. He's taken concepts from his good buddy Kyle Shanahan, and he's kind of morphed them and mixed them up into his own offense. But it's really good stuff as far as helping a quarterback to find reads quickly.
Great. It doesn't seem to be much of any urgency on the part of the Vikings to get Teddy Bridgewater back in there. How do you see that playing out? Are they worried about what might happen if they rock the boat at this point, or is Keenum just playing that well?
Let's look at it this way. Keenum started the last seven games. He's 5-2. Mm-hmm. Think about this stat that I'm about to give you for a second. Just think about this. In his last five games, he's been sacked one time. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a minute. So right now, Case Keenum is giving them what they need. And keep one thing in mind. We can sit here and say Teddy Bridgewater is better, but stylistically, they're the same. Their pass game will be absolutely the same with Bridgewater. It's a lot of quick game. It's a lot of boot action. It's a lot of play action. They take some shot plays here and there. And then what they hope for and Keenum gives you is second reaction plays, plays where he has to move out of the pocket. He had a couple last week that were just really, really good. Now, theoretically, can Bridgewater give you the same thing? Yeah, but we certainly don't know that at this point. He's missed a lot of time. So Case Keenum is actually playing very, very well.
Hey, Greg, what about another game that we shouldn't really be paying attention to because all the Bills have to do is win to be in the playoffs? But we are going to pay attention because the Ravens sit right beneath the Bills in terms of getting into the playoffs. The Ravens and the Packers, you know. And what do you think about this Packers team that has been struggling without Aaron Rodgers and this Ravens matchup?
Well, the Ravens have not proven that they can really put up a lot of points. So their offense has been somewhat anemic. The Packers, I think, are not in a situation where they're going to put up a lot of points. This might not be a high-scoring game. The Packers are going to have to try to run the football, which the Ravens have been very up and down in defending the run. They've had some weeks where they've been dominant and other weeks where they've been gashed. And I think the Packers will be going with Jamal Williams, the rookie from BYU, as their feature back. So I think I would not expect this to be a high-scoring game.
Last game I want to ask you about, Greg, and that's the game in Mexico City, the Patriots and the Raiders. Have the Raiders, you know, found their footing enough to compete with New England the way New England's playing right now? What do you see in this game?
Well, the big issue in this game is the Raiders' defense, Murph, because the Raiders' defense has been really poor versus the pass. For whatever it's worth, they have the worst passer rating against opposing quarterbacks in the NFL. And right now you're dealing with a Patriots offense that is a little different than they've been. They throw the ball down the field much more. Brandon Cooks has added that dimension. Brady is among the league leaders in 20-plus yard throws in the air from the line of scrimmage. We're not used to the Patriots playing that way. So I think the Raiders' offense may come around a little bit more, but if their defense can't get settled, particularly when they play teams like the Patriots, they're going to be in for a tough time.
Hey, Greg, one last question I have for you, and this is going back to the game last night in the Pittsburgh Steelers. They looked very good last night. In your opinion, does the championship, the AFC championship, go through Pittsburgh?
Well, we know that Pittsburgh Donald's had big problems with New England over the last number of years, that Pittsburgh can be a really good team, and then they play New England, and all of a sudden they look ordinary. So I think I wouldn't say it goes through Pittsburgh. As far as I'm concerned, it goes through New England until proven otherwise.
That's a safe bet. Hey, Greg, thanks for this. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you, I guess, in a couple of weeks. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, guys, really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks. Greg Cosell, the analyst, executive producer for NFL Matchup. You can catch it tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. on ESPN2. You can catch it Sunday at 6:30 in the morning on ESPN. Longtime senior producer for NFL Films with some interesting insights. He's watched seven Nathan Peterman games.
College games.
Of that getting ready for the draft, obviously. You know, and everybody said, you know, the narrative back then, well, he's the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft.
Yeah,
we're going to find out.
And it's crazy because you have people saying, well, he's the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft, but he doesn't have a strong arm.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, how is he the most pro-ready quarterback? And for me, it's always when you're talking about arm strength, are you talking about, you know, this guy can throw the ball 80 yards down the field? Or are you talking about on a comeback, he can zip that ball in there? You know, he has a tight spiral. He can throw it through the wind, all of that stuff. You know, I think his arm right now is underrated. I mean, you're talking about a guy who played in Heinz Field out there, which, you know, there's some wind in that stadium. It gets cold out there. You know, you're talking about a guy who's played in pro-style offenses. I think he'll be fine in making the right throws. It's really on his mind. And can he handle what the Chargers are going to bring him, you know, if they start the blitzing and all of that stuff?
You know what? I'm less concerned about that, though. Just being around him, I just think he's got a great demeanor, great maturity. We've talked about that all week. I worry less about that, and we'll see about his arm strength and all the other things. No question the Chargers are going to challenge him. Chargers are going to throw a lot of stuff at him that he hasn't seen yet, and I'm not predicting instant success, but I think his approach is pretty good, and I think he's wise beyond his years and more mature than you would expect from a 23-year-old.
I mean, I think he's mature, but it's a lot different when you got to get in there and you know, face those guys, and they start to do different things that might confuse you.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see this on tape, you know, from this team, and all of a sudden – he's getting antsy back there, and he throws it, trying to get the ball out of his hands, and you didn't see Joey Bosa actually drop out. Right. He didn't rush you this time. He dropped out, and you threw it right into his chest, you know. So that's my thing. You know, rookie quarterbacks, things are happening so fast, and they might do some different things he hasn't seen all year. We see it every game. You know, they're like, man, they did some things in this game we didn't see on film, and we had to adjust to that. And I think they're going to do that to him this week.
It's the Bills and the Chargers Sunday, 4:05 p.m. And coming up next, we're going to talk to the man at the helm of the Los Angeles Chargers in his fifth season as the general manager for the Chargers, Tom Telesco, Western New York native, standing by to join us next here on the show. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Moving along through the Friday show, we've got Lorenzo Alexander coming up with a lowdown a little bit after 2 o'clock today. We just wrapped up with Greg Cosell, his matchup breakdown. Greg Cosell from ESPN. If you missed that segment, you can catch it on our website, buffalobills.com. Bills Chargers Sunday, 4:05 p.m. Eastern Time. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Tank Hotline, the general manager of the Los Angeles Chargers, Western New York native. He played high school football right around the corner at St. Francis of Athol Springs, played his college football at John Carroll down in Cleveland. Happy to have Tom Telesco on the line with us. Tom, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thanks for joining us. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well. I'm glad this worked out. And I can tell you, I've been on BuffaloBills.com all week, which is kind of typical when you get ready for an upcoming opponent. And, you know, been reading articles and listening to interviews and listening to press conferences. And, Murph, you guys do a great job. And Chris Brown is the best in the business of what he does. And he's been doing it like that for a long time. So it's, I'm glad I could come on and be a part of it.
Yeah, great to have you with us. Thanks for that, Tom. Don and I just finishing our lunch here, Wegman subs, and the thought occurred to me, you probably know your way around a Wegman sub or two, but what's it, when you come home to Buffalo, or when family visits you out west in Los Angeles now, what kind of food do they bring, or what do you get when you're back here? What are you looking for? What kind of Western New York food do you miss, I guess?
It's funny you say that, because whenever we come back, we usually, before we get back on the flight to come back out to California, we usually do stop at Wegman's and pick up some food to bring back with us. So now there's so much you miss. You know, I usually come back and get my, you know, get some pizza somewhere. I mean, there's so many good places there. Make sure you get some food at the Apollo's. And, it's always great coming home. We don't get a chance to do it as often as we used to when we lived in Indianapolis. It's just because it's a long trip to get back. But, we love doing that. And I have some family out here with us this weekend. They brought out some food as well.
And the important question is, are they wearing Bills gear or Chargers gear at the game Sunday, your family? You don't have to answer.
They will. I'll answer that. They'll half all be in Chargers gear, or they wouldn't be there. So
I knew that. I knew that.
Hey, you can at least go half and half. jerseys.
Can't do that.
No, they are Bills fans, but when it comes to Chargers games, they're Chargers first.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you talk about not getting back here as much. It's been kind of. I know the last time you and I talked was at the combine back in February, and that's a major upheaval you and your franchise went through, moving the whole operation from San Diego up north to Los Angeles. How has that gone for you, and what sort of challenges has that presented to you, Tom?
I'll tell you what, it's been less disruptive than we had expected. You know, obviously NFL teams don't relocate very often. We've had, you know, a couple of the last, well, obviously the Rams and the Raiders will be moving in a couple of years. You know, there's no roadmap or manual to find or to follow. But I thought our organization handled it really well. You know, Dean Spanos was a big help to us when Dean said, hey, look, we're going to stay in San Diego through our offseason program. And that gave everybody, players, coaches, staff, and their families, a number of months to kind of find out where up in L.A. we were going to live and what schools and, you know, find doctors and everything like that to try and get situated through that transition. And once we got up for training camp, it was all football after that. So it hasn't been too bad. We know, you know, we're in a new market here. There's no doubt we have a lot of work to do to build a fan base in Los Angeles for the Chargers, and it's going to be measured in years, not games. It's going to take a while. I mean, I know when in Indianapolis, I was there for a while, and that team moved from Baltimore to Indianapolis in 1984. It took them 15 to 20 years to build with what they have now. So we know this. It's going to take some time here, but the transition has been not too bad so far.
Tom, you talked about, you know, they let you guys stay in San Diego for a bit before you moved up to Los Angeles. Well, one person never moved, and that's Philip Rivers. Have you had a chance to talk to him and try to talk some sense into him so he can move up to L.A.?
Yeah, you know, everybody has a different plan of what they want to do. It's we're not that far from San Diego, so it is you're able to commute it. But if you know the area out here, we also have a couple of players that live north of where we are in Orange County, and they have a long commute too, but nobody ever talks about those guys. Mm-hmm. Now he's handled it very well. You know, you wouldn't know any different. And the one thing he had told us is you're not going to see any less time in the building or less time preparing than you ever would. And if you know Philip Rivers, that doesn't even enter your mind as far as being a problem. So it really hasn't been an issue. I mean, he's got, you know, maybe a 15, 20-minute longer ride than a couple other guys, but that really hasn't been an issue at all.
Tom Telesco, our guest, the general manager of the Los Angeles Chargers in his fifth season. This season has been, I would imagine, a little bit frustrating, Tom, because, you know, you've had a couple of streaks, a losing streak to start, a winning streak that followed, and now you've dropped two in a row. That's got to be the kind of season that you almost might feel you don't have a good handle on what kind of team you have there.
That's a good point, and it has been a little frustrating the first half of the year. You know, obviously we start off 0-4, and that was very, very difficult. But I give Anthony Lynn a lot of credit with all the noise surrounding us and starting off that slow. He kept everybody focused on what they could control, kept the ship moving forward, stayed very positive. And, you know, we came out of that. We won three in a row and then dropped the last two. And, you know, we're still figuring out what type of football team we are. And usually you know by now. We're not quite there yet, and we've played some good football on both sides of the ball, but not quite enough. It's a game of little things, it's a game of details, and there's been some games where we just haven't been on every detail that you have to be to win. Just like last week against Jacksonville, we had really led most of the game and had two opportunities at the end of the game just to close it out, and we couldn't do it, and we came out with a loss. So. Yeah, we're still working. We got a lot of work to do, and it's going to be a tough challenge this week against Buffalo.
You know, you talked about Anthony Lynn. How hard has it been for him coming in as a first-year head coach? The team now has to move and transition. You know, he has to make sure that the players are all set and where they want to live and all of that stuff. And then you have these streaks of ups and downs. How has he been in coaching his team through everything?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the situation he walked into didn't do him any favors, but he has handled it tremendously well, and as we went through the interview process, because at that point the team had not decided to relocate yet, but we had to keep in our mind that it could happen. And even if we stayed in San Diego, that was going to provide some different challenges as well. But you guys know Anthony a little bit, so this is not surprising to you how he handles things, how he handles situations. There's not a lot of gray area with Anthony. It's either black or white, and he knows exactly what he wants, and he can communicate that to people. And I think the players appreciate that, and the coaches appreciate that, that the staff certainly does. And he does a good job of keeping players focused on what they need, what they can control. And there's been some different challenges this year, but he's been a great leader for us.
Well, he's surrounded by talent on his staff, including the coordinators, Gus Bradley on defense, Wisenhunt on offense. That's some big-time talent that he has to lean on and work with.
Yeah, and I think when he put the staff together, you know, having two coordinators with head coaching experience is something that he did on purpose and to help him through this as a first-time head coach. And those two guys have been in the league for a long time. Obviously, Ken Wisenhunt had been with us for a couple of years prior. Gus Bradley is new. Gus came in and changed the defense, and we're playing a different scheme than we did last year. We knew that would take some transition time as well. We weren't just going to be up to speed at 100% right off the bat, and it showed. We're better now in defense than we were certainly 4 or 5 weeks ago. But those guys have really, really helped us. They're two experienced coaches that we really needed.
Tom Telesco, our guest, the Chargers GM. Hey, Tom, I'm guessing Donald can vouch for this. Around mid-April this past year, Mike Williams of Clemson might have been elected mayor of Buffalo. That's how much people in Buffalo, Bills fans, thought of Mike Williams. You got him. He had kind of a slow start because of injuries. But where is he now, and what are you seeing from your rookie wide receiver, your first-round draft pick?
I had no idea that was his. That was the reputation in Buffalo at that time.
People loved him.
Yeah,
here.
They wanted him badly.
I had no idea. No, he's done a very good job, and you know the issue was he missed so much time during our off-season program and training camp with his injury that he was really, really far behind. So he didn't start practicing with us until about, I'd say around week two or three, I may be off, of the regular season, and it was catch-up time for him, and that's hard. It's hard to miss that much of training camp because our regular season practices are much different than training camp. So he not only had to get his football conditioning and football readiness ready, but then there's the mental side. And, you know, he knows the playbook very well, but actually getting on the field, getting into the huddle, getting out of the huddle and making the checks and adjustments with our quarterback and then making those adjustments after the snap of the ball, that takes a lot of reps and a lot of time. So he's been coming along a little bit better every week, and he's worked very hard through this. We knew it was difficult with him kind of handling the beginning of the year without playing. But he's starting to come along a little bit right now, and hopefully he's got a bright future ahead of him.
Hey, Tom, you know, we've been talking about the ups and downs and the transitions and ups and downs of your season. There is, you know, some bright spots on that team. The one that really jumps out at everybody is that defensive front, and especially Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. Can you talk a little bit about those two?
Yeah, those guys, what sticks out with those two guys for us is how unselfish they are and how they play. Obviously, pass rushers are – everyone measures them by sacks, and you know, rightfully so many times, but they play off each other very well. They're accountable to each other. They play for each other. And as if you've seen the last couple of weeks, we've been better stopping the run, which is also part of the job requirement for defensive ends in any defense. So those guys have done all the dirty work. They play hard. They play together. Every year it's important, but for us to have, you know, two pass rushers like that to help us get pressure on the football and hopefully match the coverage behind it, it's been hugely helpful this year.
Tom, last question. It's a new venue for the Bills, new venue for everybody, StubHub Center. What can folks who are listening to this game, watch this game on Sunday, what can they expect from that place and from the crowd and the atmosphere there?
Well, it is certainly unique. It's something you guys have probably, you know, never experienced before in an NFL game, because I had not until this year. It's small, but it's very tight. I mean, we say this. I mean, every seat is a great seat, just because of the way the stadium is built and how close they are to the field. But it does have a great NFL atmosphere. But it is a definitely unique experience that you won't find very many places. The atmosphere outside the stadium is pretty fun too. I've never really got a chance to see it, but I heard it is. But it's a different experience. And for Murph, you calling the game, you definitely will not need binoculars. You'll be able to see fine from the press box.
That's good. Tom, to be honest with you, Murph asked that question. He was really trying to get to that last point.
Yeah, what's
that you
it look
made.
Like? Yeah, how much can I see? That's really, it's all about me, Tom.
You got a great vantage point.
That's good. Hey, Tom, thanks for this. We wish you well. We thank you for cutting out a few minutes to talk with us on the phone today. We'll see you out there Sunday.
Anytime. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Tom Telesco in his fifth season as the general manager of the Chargers, now the Los Angeles Chargers. He joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. You know, about the stadium, he said exactly what Sam Farmer, the L.A. Times writer, told us, what, 2 days ago on the show about the sight lines. It's a great place to watch a game. I never thought of that.
When it's kind of like, you know, last year I went to see my school, Youngstown State, playing a championship game. They lost to James Madison, but it was a soccer stadium. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the stadium out there, StubHub. Is it StubHub Stadium? What is
StubHub
it?
Center.
StubHub Center. Okay, so it's just like the StubHub Center. And there was not every seat in the house was a good seat, you know. And that one probably fit about 30, 35,000 fans in that one. And it was like it didn't matter where you were sitting, even if you were at the top, because of the way it's dug into the ground, because of the way it is, you're like, you feel like you're right there on it, you know? So it's going to be small. It looks like it's like an intimate type of feel.
Yeah.
It's going to be different for the players and all, you know, fans who haven't been to a game like this, to watch an NFL game like this. It might be a cool thing, though.
You know? 27,000 seats, I believe.
Hmm.
How many Bills fans? Seven, maybe? A third of the crowd?
Yeah.
That's not about
seven
right.
Seven to ten, yeah.
Yeah. All right, looking forward to it. Got a lot more to talk about. We'll get back to the phones in a moment, so ring us up at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What is your key to a Buffalo victory Sunday in Los Angeles? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Thanks very much for tuning in. Lorenzo Alexander coming up at 2 o'clock. We'll see what Donald and Lorenzo have in store for each other. I just like to sit back, get my popcorn ready, and watch you two slug it out.
Get your popcorn ready.
Yeah.
Get your popcorn ready.
I love it.
Hey, man. You know, I have fun with Lorenzo on air. You know, we go back and forth. We have that, I guess, big brother, little brother type of relationship.
And which one are you?
I'm the little brother.
Okay.
He's a little bit older than me, you know.
Okay.
But I do get to talk to him about a lot of stuff. I've you know, there have been times where I've called him to ask him about different things for the PA,
mm-hmm.
The concussion, all of that stuff, you know, and all of this stuff that's going on. Because he's so involved with the PA, he knows a lot of that stuff. And so I lean on him for a lot. Because of that, you know, we go back and forth. We argue. It's like a real big brother, little brother
Love
relationship.
It. Can't wait. That's coming up at 2 o'clock. We're talking about this matchup with the Chargers. Our Twitter poll deals with this matchup. We want to hear from you. What's the key to a Bills victory over the Chargers on Sunday? That's the question we've been asking on Twitter. And so far, most of you seem to agree with me. 42% of you say the key is getting a balanced offensive attack. And I'm really eager to see whether Nathan Peterman can provide that. 33% of you say the Bills have to stop the run, and who wouldn't think that's a big key based on what's gone on the last couple of weeks? 19% say handle the Chargers' pass rush. I get it. They're pretty impressive. 6% say something else. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A call here from John calling from Tampa Bay. Hello, John. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, I tell you what, man, I like this Peterman kid out of Pittsburgh. You know, he checks all the boxes you want in a franchise quarterback, 6'2", 225.
Thanks, John. He's doing a little Gruden there.
Yeah, I was about to say.
This is not open mic night. This is not evening at improv. You take your comedy act
somewhere
else.
You know, he was actually good with it, though. He was good with it.
I'm not in the mood for that. Just not. You know, this is not open mic.
Hey, man, you should have let him keep going. He was good with it.
All right, Donald wants you to call back, John. Call back, and I'll step aside. Paige in Buffalo. Hello, Paige.
How's it going, guys?
Hang on. I don't trust people when they use the show for their – I don't. I think, where's he going with this? My antenna go up. Go ahead, Paige. I knew what he was doing, and I thought, no.
Paige is laughing at you, too.
Paige, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to mention I know we were early in the show we were just talking about the switch from Tyrod and the whole defense thing. Obviously, the quarterback is going to make your team – everybody around him a lot better. One of the things that I have an issue with is the pre-snap. You got to win this thing pre-snap. You know, when Brady's at the line of scrimmage, he's beating you at the line of scrimmage. So I'm interested to see Peterman get in the game and, you know, this, you know, being able to check out of a play here and there, you know, switch your protections. You know, obviously we talk about him getting the ball out faster, which is a great thing, but you're going to make that offensive line you know, better once you know, he's standing in the pocket, stepping through, throwing into the throwing lanes. It's hard to block for Tyrod when you don't know if he's going left or out. He's 10 steps back. So that's the thing, is just, you know, having a program where everybody's on the same page, getting the ball out and throwing the guy open.
You know, it's always interesting to me, and we had Ruben on yesterday. You know, Ruben was above average offensive lineman.
Yeah.
You know, so his perspective on things sometimes can be a little bit different, you know, like just do it type of thing. Or it's like, Rube, you actually could do it better than a lot of other people. But it's always interesting to me to think about, you know, you get these holding calls and stuff, and do you have more holding calls? There's probably a stat out there that says something like this. Do you have more holding calls when you have mobile quarterbacks? When you have quarterbacks that are running around because the lineman doesn't know where he is. He's just trying to, you know, get a feel or something. And then all of a sudden, the defensive lineman starts to move one way and you're holding because you feel like he's about to get to the quarterback. You just don't know where the quarterback is. That's always interesting to me. Well, you have less holding calls now when you have a guy standing back there getting the ball out quickly.
The ball's coming out quicker.
Right.
Yeah, you should. You would think. Certainly less sacks. Rob Cauley from Orchard Park. Hello, Rob. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Good.
I got 2 points, and then I'll hang up and listen. Between Nathan Peterman and Taylor, you know, I'm 50-50 with that. You know, I mean, that's their decision. But if you take a look at the Rams, and you got Goff, he was the same draft pick, same spot, 2 years ago.
That's and who's who?
He's doing with the Chargers. That's I who? Mean, the Rams.
Now, Goff was the number 2 overall pick, right?
He was number 1 overall pick. He went before Wentz.
You're right.
No, I thought he was 5.
Nah, he went number 1 before Wentz.
Okay, well, I'm very sorry for that. I thought he was. But second year. And let me tell you, you know what he's got? He has our receivers. And think about that. But I don't, you know, again, that was their move. And I'd just like to, you know from Donald why they do things like that. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Why do they do that, Donald?
They were both. I mean, look.
One was a free agent. One was traded.
Yeah, one was a free agent. He was going to want a lot. He was going to get $8 million a year, which he got to go out to Los Angeles. And even if the Bills would have offered him $8 million a year, he's from Los Angeles. He probably would have gone home, you know. And then you have Sammy Watkins. That was a whole trade thing. And there was a lot that went into that trade. You had money. You had injuries. You had a lot of different things.
Draft picks
that
went, coming
yeah,
back.
Yeah, draft picks. And so,
starting corner coming back.
Right, exactly. You know, so, look, those are business decisions that they have to make. And I understand that those guys, you see them out there making plays for Jared Goff now. But that's just the league. Guys move around and they make plays in other places.
Let's go to – now I feel guilty about cutting off that Gruden impersonator.
It's all good.
No, I feel bad about it. I just don't, you know, when somebody comes on to do shtick, I'm thinking, well, you know, where are you going to go with this? I
mean, yeah, you never know.
You auditioning?
You
know what I mean?
He's recording it at home.
Exactly, right? He probably was. Call back, John. I feel guilty
you hung
about
up on him.
John, and I know. I feel too quick on the trigger. Jim in Wheatfield. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I think the key for the Bills having success of any kind going forward is to let Peterman just play quarterback. Now, don't restrict him. Don't. You know, you hear all kinds of rumblings and nobody's inside the game that, you know, Taylor couldn't check off or couldn't audible. Just let the guy go out and see if he can play quarterback. Make mistakes. Learn from the mistakes. Don't play afraid. We've had 2.5 years of managing the game, and it's gotten you exactly what that safe stuff does. It's gotten you middle of the pack, 8-8, 9-7, no playoffs. Let this guy go and see what he can do. He's going to make mistakes, clearly. You know, but let him see if he can be a quarterback in the NFL.
I agree with you on that, but I have to say, I don't think they had really tight rein on Tyrod Taylor. In fact, I think they would have loved to see Tyrod take more chances, throw into tight coverage, open it up a little bit. I mean, even as recently as Monday, Rick Dennison was saying that, right? The checkoff thing, the audible thing is different. I wouldn't imagine that Nathan Peterman has
definitely not having free reins to just make checks.
But it's not as if they were holding the reins on Tyrod Taylor. They wanted him to cut it loose a little bit. And the way he was trained, the way he plays, he just didn't do it.
The biggest thing with Tyrod, and we all want to see, you know, we just had a caller, I don't know if that was the last segment or this segment, say, you know, you win this pre-snap. you know, because Tom Brady, Drew Brees, all of these guys, when they get up to the line, they're making all their checks and doing all of that stuff. And you do want to see that from your quarterback. But for me, the biggest thing with Tyrod was to just pull the trigger, just throw the ball, you know, be on time and throw the ball. And even if they didn't, even if he wasn't allowed to make all of those checks at the line of scrimmage, there were a lot of plays to be made, you know, if he just pulled the trigger and threw the ball. So that's my biggest thing with Tyrod.
Hey, he's back now. John in Tampa Bay. John, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Let me offer my apologies for having the quick trigger finger, but I'm going to send you over a disclaimer. You agree you're not going to say any bad words, or you can do your stick here, and it was pretty good in retrospect. Just kidding. Go ahead, John. What's on your mind?
I mean, the guy checks all the boxes, 6 foot two, 225 pounds. I mean, he throws a frozen rope in the middle of July. The guy's got some zip when he slings that thing, you know. I like the kid a lot, and, you know, I just want to leave it with this. I cannot wait to see these rabid Buffalo Bills fans rally around big number 22, Jason Peterson. I can't wait to see what he does in the NFL. Thank you.
See, it's pretty good.
Was that worth him coming back?
Yeah, it was worth him coming back.
I'm dying to know what his face looked like when he was doing that.
Yeah, he tried to do the Chucky doll face.
Yeah, right?
Because I always felt like Gruden looks like a Chucky doll.
Oh, yeah, many people.
Yeah.
I'm just dying to know what John's face looked like, if he looked like him.
It would be crazy if he actually does look like Gruden.
Yeah. That was great. All right, John, I feel better now. Thanks for calling back. Lorenzo's coming up. The Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander when we return. Hour three coming up, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills have come off the practice field for their Friday workout. Steven Hauschka, Bills kicker, should be ready to go. Sean McDermott saying earlier today, looks good for Hauschka, who missed yesterday's practice with hip injury. Said he's moving in the right direction and should be okay. No practice today for left tackle Cordy Glenn with his foot and ankle. No practice for running back Mike Tolbert with his hamstring. Limited work for Charles Clay, Jordan Matthews, Jerry Hughes. The Bills will leave on Saturday around noon tomorrow to get ready to go play the Los Angeles Chargers. 1 o'clock kickoff. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn says he's having his team prepare a little bit for Tyrod Taylor. He says he wants his team to keep in mind the differences between Taylor and Peterman, the so-called pocket passer, in case the Bills go back to Tyrod Taylor during Sunday's game. Bills-Chargers, 4.05 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff on Sunday from StubHub Center in Carson, California. Larry Fitzgerald has signed a one-year extension with the Cardinals, keeping him in Arizona through the 2018 season. 34-year-old wide receiver with no signs of slowing down in his 14th season. The Cardinals are 4-5 this year, and they play at Houston on Sunday. Ben Roethlisberger, 4 touchdown passes as the Steelers beat Tennessee 40-17 last night. A huge night for Antonio Brown. He caught 10 passes for 144 yards and 3 touchdowns. NFL owners will meet December 13th in Irving, Texas with an owners-only meeting to deal with the impending extension for Commissioner Roger Goodell. Sabres in action tonight. The Sabres and Detroit tonight. And it's the Sabres' first visit to Detroit's new building, 7:30 face-off. Austin Falk and Taylor Fadun were both absent from practice yesterday. The Sabres in Detroit, 7:30 faceoff coming up tonight. And in the NBA last night, the Boston Celtics came from behind to beat the Golden State Warriors 92-88 for their 14th consecutive win. The Celtics have won 14 in a row, knocking off the defending NBA champions last night. And a big game for Kyrie Irving, who scored 11 points in the final quarter to hand the Celtics the victory. It is the John Murphy Show, the third and final hour of the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. And joining us in studio, as he does every Friday at this time, we are very happy to have Lorenzo Alexander in here for the Lowdown. Hi, Lorenzo.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
You okay?
I'm good. I'm good.
Your energy's not Friday. Lagging at all?
Huh?
Your energy's not lagging? You're good? You're feeling good?
Yeah, I feel great. Okay. I mean, it's Friday afternoon. I'm about to go get another massage therapy here in a minute. And I got date night with my daughter tonight. So, I'm good. I'm in a good spot.
What's on the docket for date night?
I think we're going to go. My cousin works over at the Cheesecake Factory. So, I'm going to probably take her over there so I can slide in there and then do Dave and Buster's with her.
Excellent. Hey, can I ask you, I was reading the story about Larry Fitzgerald, the former
Oh, yeah,
King
I was about to mention that, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, what?
It's an inspiration. I texted him last night. I was like, man, you're a true inspiration, dude, because this is year 14 for him. He's not slowing down. And for a team to want to sign, obviously what he means to that team and organization is you know, out of this world. But most teams, when you see an agent player, they don't want to sign you back. But they're going to sign him back and pay him $11 million because he's playing at an elite level.
It's crazy.
And it's just – it's all inspiring. So I had to text him and say, man, I'm proud of you. You know, it's pretty impressive.
Did he get back yet?
Huh?
Did he get back to you yet?
No, he'll text me like in 2 or 3 days. That's how he operates.
Well, he's probably got a million
times. Yeah. I had an opportunity to train with him for a week out there in Arizona. And when you watch him train, you know, a guy who has really done everything in this league. I mean, this league, he hasn't won a Super Bowl, right?
No.
So that's what he's still really trying to get to. But he has done everything else in this league. When you watch him train, I mean, he pays attention to detail, you know. And I remember, like, it was probably about 40 of us from around the league all out there training. He had, like, 3 trainers, and he was running the entire show. He's like, I'm like, why do you even have trainers here? You might as well just train us yourself, you know. But that's the type of guy he is. Yeah. He pays attention to detail. When he's running routes, you can see it on the field. He runs it so crisp, and that's why he's still playing the way he is right now.
I had one exposure to Larry Fitzgerald. It was last year. You guys beat him last September here, 2016.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my buddy, you know, Mark Dalton, my buddy works
Mark,
for the Cardinals.
Yep, good people.
And he introduces me to him in the locker room. Now, the Bills had just beaten the Cardinals pretty badly.
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald stopped what he was doing, looked me in the eye, shook my hand. How are you, John, if you're a friend of Mark Dalton?
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is special.
He has great perspective on life. I mean, he's a football player, but he's a great human being. Yeah. Obviously, he's been up for Walter Payton Man of the Year. I'm not quite sure if he's won it. Oh, he won it last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a great all-the-way-around guy, and he's one of the best that this league has ever produced or, you know, has been in this league.
Yeah, you're friends with him. Do you know what he wants to do after?
Yeah, that's
I mean, he's all over the place. I mean, he does a lot of traveling now, a lot of philanthropy work. He's a photographer.
Yeah.
I mean, the world is his oyster. I mean, he's made, obviously, a lot of money, so he can do whatever he wants to, but I know he's going to want to be able to give back, serve the community, as well as travel the world. He has 2 beautiful sons, so obviously he spent a lot more time with them, and
because
they're going to getting older. I think his oldest is probably around 5 or 6 now, maybe a little bit older than that. Maybe Zoe's age. So, you know, just hanging out with them, you know, still young, and, you know, they're going to start playing ball and doing all those things. So being a daddy whenever he decides he wants to hang it up.
You know, you think about it, and I was going to ask that question, because what does a guy like do that when he's done playing football? You know what he could do? He could be president of the United States. I really believe that.
If he wanted to. I don't know if he has that, you know, the politics side can wear people out, you know.
His dreads would be all great.
I'd vote for him tomorrow.
He's a great dude.
All right. Well, thanks, Lorenzo. Thanks for coming on and telling us.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah. Larry Fitzgerald, one of the best.
The Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. Let's talk a little bit about the major, before we get to your keys, obviously, the game. The big upheaval, the big story.
Well, before we get to the
let John
get to this story
the
first.
Show.
Let's get to this story first. You guys are traveling. You're traveling out west, right?
Yeah.
So how tough is it for you as a player now to travel on a Saturday and go 5 hours to the West Coast to play a game?
I mean, the hardest part is just sitting on the plane. And then, you know, being tight, not being able to get into any great sleep, so it kind of messes up your rhythm a little bit. But when I was with Oakland, they used to do this great protocol after we had long flights where you would, like, kind of reactivate your system, stretch your central nervous system. So I actually do it every week, and I even make it more of a adamant to put it in my regimen once we land, whether it's before or after meetings, just to kind of activate my system again, like I'm about to get ready to compete, and then I'll do, like, a Normatec just to get my body somewhat recovered from that 4 or 5 hour flight. So it's hard to do, but I've kind of figured out a system that best fits me.
I was talking to Sean McDermott about it today, and he did mention he thought it was important as you guys travel west to let you guys, players, sleep in your own beds tonight. So that, you know, you can go a day early, but then you're kind of a little more disruption.
Yeah, right? Well, there's been, you know, a lot of guys like to go 2 days early, maybe get kind of acclimated to the weather or the time difference. But, I mean, science has shown that it really doesn't make a difference. It's actually better to go that one day because your body starts changing over and then you're coming right back. So it's actually more hurtful to go 2 days versus one day.
Right.
But at the same time, I kind of lost my train of thought there. That really happens.
The football. It'll do that to you.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've done it both ways. We did last year when it was one day and we won the game. And I just like it better like that. It's actually harder on my body when we go that extra day.
Yeah.
All right, the big story around here these days is the quarterback change. How did you get word of that, and what did you think when you heard it?
Well, we have this early meetings, Morton, on both Wednesday and Thursday, and Coach Sean McDermott, after our signal callers had our meeting, he kind of held over a couple of the leaders that sit on the leadership council and told us and informed us, and then right in the team meeting right after, he let everybody else know. But apparently he had talked to Tyrod the day before to let him know, give him the respect, you know, just to let him know what was going up. going on. And, you know, you can't do nothing but appreciate the way he did it, you know, up front, letting you know what's going on. And you don't find out, you know, through the media or ESPN.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's a leak. And, it kind of pops up in the tweet. And you're like, man, I ain't even talked to him yet, which has happened,
sure. You
know, throughout the times. So, you know, that's kind of how we found out as a team.
Now we're a few days into it. How are the players responding to that? What do they think?
We're just rallying around Nate. I mean, obviously there's nothing we can do as far as, even we all want Tyrod. You can't dwell in that. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we all respect him as a player and what he does, but there's been a decision made, and now we have to kind of move on. And he's doing a good job as well, helping Nate preparing us on the defense. We have to rally around that. And, you know, defensively, we have to just step our game up and help Nate, Tyrod, whoever's back there, give them the most advantage. So we have to worry about our jobs. We can't dwell about what that decision has done, because then you can kind of lose focus and continually kind of be in this spiral that we've been in the last couple of weeks.
You know, I've had some tweets on this, and people say, well, if you sit the starting quarterback and put in the rookie, that puts everybody else on notice. I would think with this team, that doesn't really matter. You're just trying to win games.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like I'm, my job is at stake. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you realize that the actions that you have can affect people on your team. Mm-hmm. I mean, because let's be honest, if the defense plays better and we win those games, Tyrod is still starting. Mm-hmm. So it just makes me want to be even more accountable to my teammates, not necessarily just Tyrod, but just everybody out there, because by me missing a play or somebody else missing a play, it can hurt somebody else and their job in the future or whatnot, because it all ties in because we're a team. And
right. And
anytime you're in a leadership role, whether it's head coach, quarterback, you take a lot of the blame and probably take too much of the credit as well. And that's just the nature of the business when you're in that leadership role. So we just want to go out there and play the best for our team, and regardless whoever the quarterback is, because we know if we play as a defense at the top of our level, it's going to be hard to beat us.
Tyrod's on that leadership council. He's a captain, right?
Yeah,
and
uh-huh.
I have to say, been around here for a little bit, I've never seen anybody handle those type of things better than Tyrod Taylor has.
Yes, it's hard to do. Publicly. I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, you have a lot of pride, a lot of work you put in the off season, energy. You know, you've been the guy. You probably feel a certain type of way privately. And you have to, be a professional and kind of rise above all that and do mm-hmm. what's best for other people. And it's hard to do because, obviously we've seen out through this league, some guys is like, it's all about me and I don't care, about this team. I'm going to let you know it. I'm going to let the media know how I feel and everybody else. But he's done a great job preparing all week, being the same guy. And, I mean, I think that's the ultimate tell of what type of leader he is.
How has Nathan looked? In practice.
Nate looks good. I mean, obviously nobody can hit him now, right. But he what I like about Nate, he gets the ball out quick. He's very decisive, and then he has a great demeanor about himself. I don't really feel like he's shook that he's starting this week, or a moment can be too big or a situation can be too big for him, and that's what you want out of a young guy. Because honestly, he's probably gonna get hit. I mean, they have some pretty good pass rushers, and it's all about how does he respond. And I think the way or who he is going to allow him to overcome those instances where he has faced some adversity to stand back up and make some plays for us.
It is the Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander as we go through Lorenzo's keys, his thoughts about Sunday's matchup, the Bills and the Chargers. Well, let's start with your Lowdown and start with what you think has to happen. And starts with basically you guys on defense.
Right. I mean, I think every point up here is about the defense. It's very simple, back to fundamentals, back to the very basis of football, and it's about stopping the run, which we have not been able to do the last two outings, and that's all about, getting off blocks, using your hands, tackling, and tackling in swarms. People talk about the missed tackles, but we've had missed tackles all year. The difference is that you have multiple bodies flying in on guys, so if one guy misses it, another guy is there to clean it up.
Yeah.
And happens, throughout the league all the time since the beginning of the time. People earlier in the week were talking about, so what about, OTAs? They're trying to find a reason, an excuse for it. And it's just all about guys getting back to the fundamentals, getting off the blocks, fitting where they need to fit, not trying to do too much, and making plays together.
I know you play in the league, you get paid to do a job, right? And so you're having fun out there playing. Mm-hmm. But do you guys get to a certain point, and I know this, but for the people listening, do you get to a certain point in the season – we're okay. We're getting into the season now. My body is sore every single week. So now guys might not be flying to the ball full speed like they were in the beginning of the season because you're fresh and I'm ready to play.
I don't know if that affects you on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I know during the week, I know for me, I'm not moving as fast as I probably was in practice week 1, 2, 3, and 4. Mm-hmm. just because now I'm in the thick of things. I'm an older guy, but I still do early outs, focus on the fundamentals, things that when I am there out on Sunday, I can play fast, I can connect, just because I've been doing it so long, so it's more muscle memory. So I do things like that just to make sure my fundamentals are good. And then you just try to go out there and play as fast as you can. So during the week, it may affect you a little bit just because of the soreness, but Sundays, you forget all about it. You know, as I say before, you know, you pop a couple of pills and juiced up from the excitement about to go play, and you go out and lay it on the line.
Lorenzo, like my uncle.
Before we go bowling.
Yeah.
I'm like, I got to take these a lead. Hold on.
It just is what it is. It's how we got to play, you know.
You mentioned getting back to basics, to fundamentals. Coach Frazier, Leslie Frazier said something, I want to say Monday this week, about that. He talked about almost getting back into a training camp mentality as far as fundamentals and the bare bones of what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I think because like you said, when you get through the thick of the season and running, you really don't have a lot of time. So one of the first things that is cut down is individual time. So individual time, maybe go from 15 minutes to 5 minutes. You hit some quick things, and then you're just getting into the scheme. What are they doing? So we can play fast and understand how they're trying to attack us. And with that, if you don't have time or you don't have the schedule or the routine of maybe coming out as a player, staying after, working on some of those things that you're going to need, using your hands, whether it's pass rush moves, whether it's breaking on balls, catching balls as a DB, whatever that may be that's going to help you still play at a high level. If you don't have that in your routine, some of those things can start to wane and get a little rusty. So that's what he meant by returning to, I guess, training camp mode. We kind of extended our individual time to work on some of those fundamentals that are going to lead to us shoring up some of these explosive plays that we've been giving up by not fitting the run properly.
Now, for you as an individual player, would you rather extend the individual period to work on those fundamentals or stay in that game plan mode?
I mean, it depends. I mean, I think because the issue is being like team-wide, it's not just like one or two guys. It's a different guy on every play that has been fundamentally unsound. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of return to that. I think if it's a guy here, a guy there, like a couple of weeks I wasn't tackling well, so I just worked on some things by myself just so I can kind of get back into it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a coach's decision. He recognizes how widespread the issue is. And if it's more than one or two guys, then you do have to address it the way you practice.
Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander, his number one lowdown, stop the run. Number two, you don't want to give up big plays. And with Phillip Rivers, these guys can be capable of making big plays.
Right, and it really ties into, like I said earlier, by stopping the run, coming off tackling well, not allowing those you know, 3 or 4 yard plays to turn into 20, 25, as we saw Ingram and Kamara do to us last week. Mm-hmm. And then once you're able to stop the run and hone in on that, and Phillip Rivers wants to throw the ball around to some of his guys, Keaton Allen being one of those guys, a Cal guy that's been doing well in this league, Antonio Gates, then you can pin your ears back and rush the pass or affect him to where he can't get the ball down the field, because their offensive line has struggled as well, has some injuries in and out, some shuffling of the guys, and they haven't found that chemistry quite yet. So as defenders, as rush ends and defensive tackles, you know, we all want to get the sacks, the fans want to get pressure, but if we haven't stopped that run, then we can't do it. So that's why we got to stop the run, then we can pin our ears back and then affect the quarterback.
Phillip Rivers came into the league right around the time you did, I would
think. Yeah, he's a year older than me. I think he came in 2004.
Have you gone up against him a lot in your career?
When I was with the Raiders, we played him twice, and I think I probably played him two or three other times, because the majority of my career I've been in the NFC, so we don't face him, you know, on a yearly basis.
He's probably the most outspoken quarterback in the league. Like, he'll get in your face, talk trash and everything.
Yeah, he'll do that. I mean, but he's a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know. I've seen some things he's done on film too, where he kind of some phantom flops, and you know, he's trying to draw you in. And I've been around him a little bit, you know, so he's a good dude, but you know, he's trying to find any competitive advantage to where he's going to draw a 15-yard penalty. You get in his face, touch him, oh, I'm a flop. Then, you know, he's a quarterback. So he plays to that a lot. But if we hit him, we'll be fine, I think.
He has some elements that remind me of the Hall of Fame quarterback who played here, Jim Kelly, in terms of competitiveness and toughness. He seems like he's a little bit like that. Have you found that to be the case?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know.
You've said a lot.
We'll see Sunday. That's a lot to say, Jim Kelly. I guess you compared him to one of the greats of all time.
I'm talking
so
about
I don't,
in terms
you know,
of toughness and okay.
You put him to Jim Kelly. I mean, that's the standard I'm putting him against right now.
Okay, all right. You said a lot there. Lowdown, topic number three. What happened to the takeaways? You had 15 takeaways in five games, and you won four of those five. And you have one in the last two. What happened?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, I think a lot of it was not being able to stop the run. I mean, a lot of those takeaways are interceptions. You know, Jordan and Micah back there ball hawking once we know the run is stuff. Now they have to come up, play the run, and not do what their strength is as far as ball hawking, playing in coverage, and doing those things on the back end. So, again, it all goes back to stopping the run. Once you can do that, you can disguise on the back end, confuse quarterbacks, and they throw balls up. Defensive ends, tackles, rushing the pass can hit them and get some balls fluttering.
Yeah.
And that's when you get the takeaways. Obviously, we had one last week, and it's harder to, force a fumble than, you know, maybe pick one off.
Is Phillip Rivers the type of quarterback? We know he likes to throw it all around the field. Does he have a lot of confidence, gunslinger mentality, where he'll give you some?
Oh, he's going to throw it. I mean, he has confidence in who he is. I mean, he is one of the greats, you know, at least of my generation playing the game and has a lot of confidence in all his guys, Keenan Allen and Tony Gates, who I mentioned earlier, who he believes if he puts it up, those guys are going to come down with the ball. So, but at the same time, you know, and it's kind of been a new trend, you know, guys not wanting to take sacks, he'll still try to throw the ball and leave it up in the air for guys that, you know, 50-50 balls the guys can come down with.
Hey, Lorenzo, I mentioned to Donald the other day, I think just yesterday, how this season, and we're only nine games in, has been like a roller coaster for the Bills. Do you feel that? I mean, I almost feel mentally exhausted with the moves, the personnel moves, the tremendous highs, some deep lows, including last Sunday. Do you feel that, or is it just me?
I mean, I think this was just a regular ebbs and flows of the season. As far as the adversity, you know, wins and losses, I guess it's added when you have the trades of some guys, some top-end guys. You know, you think about Sammy and Marcel. You got a new coaching staff. So I guess in that aspect, but I don't think affects us as much as the wins and losses and how you may necessarily lose. Because that other part is part of football, and this is going to – you got to deal with it. Now, when you out there playing a game and you get your butt whooped, that I think, to me, affects me differently than maybe trading a guy.
Now you got me worried that there's a hangover from that butt-whooping, as you called it last Sunday, too.
No, I'm just saying. It's at that time. I mean, when you're dealing with – I mean, I don't feel it now. We're past it. We moved on. But the effect, you know, the day that Marcel got traded and then going out there and get somebody physically whooping me, you know, as a team, then I think that's just – it's more personal because it's me. Yeah, it's just different.
Yeah.
You know, Marcel's issue is different then because I'm not really – I'm affected by it, but I'm not, versus somebody running the ball down our throat.
I just was about to
say. You know what I'm saying?
It's different. You know, you lose a game because Drew Brees is throwing it all around the field. That's one thing.
Right.
But when they can just run the ball.
That's the worst.
That's just like slow.
Right.
Just like gut shots, you know what I mean? Body shots. It's like if you watch boxing and somebody just keeps taking body shots instead of the big.
Just knock me out, man. Just knock me out. Stop. You're torturing me.
Right.
So, I'm impressed by the way you two got along today on this segment.
We get along great. We're brothers.
That's what he said, yeah.
Yeah.
He said you were the big brother, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm older.
Okay.
I own it.
Thanks, Lorenzo. Good luck Sunday.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Lorenzo Alexander with the Lowdown joining us in studio as he does every Friday. Donald and I back with more. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Again, our thanks to Lorenzo Alexander for joining us. It was an interesting response to my question about Phillip Rivers. It's funny. I've watched Phillip Rivers for years and watch him on TV. You have one impression, and Lorenzo has another one, which is good. I like that.
When you watch guys on TV, that's really all you have. You know,
that's all
because
I have
it,
on
it
Phillip
looks
Rivers,
like, man, this dude is tough. He gets hit. He gets back up, you know.
Yeah.
But then when you're down there on the field, there are things that are done and said, and you're looking at other players, and you're just like – what are you doing, dude? Like, especially quarterbacks, when you see them like flop, and you see him, you know, Brady is known for, as soon as he gets hit, he's looking at the ref.
Yeah,
and players hate it, and it's like, dog, it's not that serious. You know, if they want to throw a flag, they're gonna throw a flag, and a lot of times they throw the flag as soon as he looks. They throw the flag for Brady. You know, and Phillip Rivers is trying to get that same thing,
and especially that Brady treatment,
right? And, you know, and for defensive players. They're like, you keep looking at the ref, I'm going to hit you harder, you know? the next time I get to you, I'm going to hit you harder so that you have to look at the ref, you know, because that gets to be annoying. I look at basketball,
the way it is today
mm-hmm.
versus the way it was back in the, you know, the 70s and 80s.
When men were men.
Right. You know, when you look at guys like LeBron right now, the best player in the world, but he's always flopping, always looking at the refs, you know, and you're like, LeBron, come on, man. It's not that serious. Get up and run back down the court. Why are you looking at the ref right now trying to get a call? He didn't call it. Go back down the court, and then he'll run back down the court and smack somebody's shot or something like that. Nobody wants to see you looking at the ref every time somebody breathes on you.
Yeah, I got it. And Lorenzo set me straight, and I'm, that's why I'm here. Soak up info.
So what's going to happen is Sunday, you're going to be in the booth, and you're like, he's looking at the ref every time he gets hit.
Look, I'll see it now. Yeah, I'll look for it now. Again, one of the Chargers, one of those teams you don't see a lot. Mm-hmm. Bills Chargers Sunday, the injury report is out for the Buffalo Bills, and they do have a couple of players out for this game, including Cordy Glenn with his foot and ankle. He is out. He has yet to practice all week, did not practice today. Also out today, offensive lineman John Miller, who was limited with an ankle yesterday, did not practice at all today. So John Miller, who's been inactive for the last couple of games, is going to be out this week. Mike Tolbert, running back, is going to miss this game. He has been ruled out with his hamstring. Tolbert has yet to play this season, which I would think means we'll get a look at Travaris Cadet. Wouldn't you think so, Donald? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
a little bit more work for I Pat think DeMarco.
Just about to say, you might see Pat DeMarco get some running back action as well.
Yeah.
You know, but Travaris Cadet, I want to see that kid play. You know, he's not a kid. I mean, he's been in, 6 years now. Mm-hmm. But I do want to see him play here because I think he's a weapon. I think he can catch it out of the backfield, and I think he can run it good.
Bills list three players as questionable, including Charles Clay, who did not practice Wednesday, limited the last 2 days, still dealing with that knee injury. Jerry Hughes listed as questionable with a shin and a calf injury, didn't practice Wednesday, practiced on a limited basis the last few days. Jordan Matthews listed as questionable. He's got a knee injury. Jordan Matthews questionable after limited practice. And some of the others, let me think, who were we monitoring? Oh, E.J. Gaines is back. Full practice the last 2 days. E.J. Gaines is fully ready to go. Same for Zay Jones. Full practice all week long. Zay Jones, he could benefit from having Peterman in there.
Yeah, he was full participant in practice.
Full participant all week.
I watched him just run some routes, and he looked good out there. You know, and it was so tough because – he looked like he was about to have a monster game.
Against the Jets.
Yeah. You know, he really looked like he was about to come into his own there, have a monster game. He scored his first touchdown. And then all of a sudden, you get somebody wants to stick their foot out there, you know, and then a player gets hurt. So I'm glad to see him back, you know. And I think that he and Nathan, I hope that he and Nathan Peterman have a connection. You know, it's up to both of those guys to make plays. Ultimately, having a Kelvin Benjamin and a Charles Clay out there on the field and a Deontay Thompson and a Jordan Matthews, you know, will help Zay Jones. He doesn't have all the pressure of having to be the number. You remember the second game of the season.
He was the number one receiver.
He was the number one receiver, you know. And you're talking about a second-round rookie. That's a lot. And he was having a rough go for a span of how many games?
Yeah.
The first half of the season, you know. So now he has no pressure. Let's go out there when the ball's thrown to you, make the play.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing him. And Zay Jones, when he met with the media early this week, the Bills rookie wide receiver, talked about Nathan Peterman and talked about the change not really having an effect on the Bills' focus going through the rest of the year.
Everything that we want is still in front of us, so we can't lose sight of our true vision. Changes are going to happen. This is not the first time that a big change has happened, so really, we just have to trust what the coaches say and the people who are higher up and way above me and just really just focus on this team. I think it just needs to bring us closer together at this point and understand what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish.
What have you seen from Tyrod since, you know, the switch was made? He is a captain.
Yeah, just still a positive attitude, a great teammate and leader. He was having fun today, you know, just being lively with us and still just being his same person that he is, and just still helping with watching film and things of those sorts. So his attitude and his demeanor hasn't changed. I can't speak for him, but the things that I've seen from afar and up close, it looks like the same Tyrod to me.
What do you think about Nate's readiness for this moment?
Nate's a great player, and we all know that. He prepares like he's a starter, and now he actually gets that opportunity. So looking forward to seeing the things that he does. I have faith in him. I have faith in anyone that our coaches put behind center. And now it's Nathan, so just trusting and get that timing down with him, and you know, look forward to this upcoming Sunday.
Good to have Zay Jones back in the lineup on Sunday and see him progress through his rookie season. I agree with you. I think he was on the verge of kind of breaking through in that Jets game.
He was. He was.
What'd you say? Somebody tripped him? Yeah, he did trip him.
Yeah, somebody stuck his foot out there and tripped him like we were little kids. You know,
Buster Screen.
Yeah. And so. You know, it was tough to see that, but I'm glad to see him back. I hope that they do connect. I hope he gets the ball around to everybody. You know, everybody becomes a weapon in this game. That'll be exciting to see. The one thing he talked about with Tyrod Taylor and being a professional and being the same guy and having fun. I actually, you know, we talked to Chris Brown yesterday as he was out there in the field during the individual, and I'm watching Tyrod Taylor in the background as we're talking to Chris, and I can see he and Kelvin Benjamin in the background dancing and, you know, because they have the music pumping out there. So he's not, like, changed as an individual person.
Right.
You know, he's still coming in. And, hey, look, deep down, I feel a certain way. But I can't show that right now, you know. And it's bigger than Nino Brown. It really is. It's bigger than Tyrod Taylor. You have young guys like Zay Jones that are looking at you. How does he handle this? Because at some point, every player goes through this. Every player goes through, you might be benched. Or they go and draft a player in the first round in your position. And you're looking at it like, whoa. Now what? You know, so it's good that Tyrod is still being the same person in the locker room.
Bills and Chargers, want to know from you, what do you think the key is for a Buffalo victory over the Chargers? That's our Twitter poll we've been talking about all day. What's the key for the Bills going into this game on Sunday? On Twitter, those who've responded, and there have been a lot, 43% of you say the key is a balanced offensive attack that Nathan Peterman might be able to provide. 32% say stopping the run. That's what Lorenzo Alexander had for his top key. 19% say handling the Chargers' pass rush. 6% say something else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's squeeze in a call here from Tom on Grand Island. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First-time caller. I love the show.
Thank you, Tom.
I just want to say that, you know, Nathan Peterman is a rookie. And, you know, he may have some ups and downs, but I think that, you know, he's got enough weapons around him. Like, you know, let's see what the kid can do. I mean, I don't know. I really liked him coming out of the draft. It was actually my papa and I wanted to possibly take, like, a third-rounder on him, and he ended up being available in the fifth round. I thought it was pretty cool. And, you know, I agree with the quarterback change, like, as hard as it was to do, especially for a first-time head coach. And, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to the game now, Sunday, that he's playing. And I just want to get your guys' thoughts on that. This makes the game more exciting now that he's playing. And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. You know, it's crazy to hear people say that, right? Because ultimately, and this is nothing against Tom and Grand Island, I've heard a lot of people say this, like, man, I'm looking forward to watching this game. And then it makes you wonder, like,
you weren't?
Were you looking forward to watching it? And once again, Tom, nothing against you. I've heard a lot of people say that. But I think people's mentality of the team had kind of shifted a little bit, you know, because you went on this streak, you got to 5-2, and then all of a sudden you lay one down against the Jets, and you hope to bounce back from that one. And then that game last week was just – that was brutal at home, to get blown out like that at home for a team to run the ball down your throat like that. And I think – people's mentalities had started to shift.
It was a demoralizing loss.
Yeah, exactly. People started to shift their mentalities here in Buffalo and maybe weren't as excited about watching the game. They probably were going to turn it on just because the team was playing this Sunday, but it wasn't like, I'm looking forward to watching this game. I can't wait to see it. But now they make a move and shake things up, and people want to see Nathan Peterman play, you know. So everybody's going to tune in on Sunday to watch this thing.
Here is Ed in New Jersey. Hello, Ed. Welcome.
Hey, what's going on, John? It's actually your friend Edric. What's going on, Donald?
Oh,
what's
how you up? Doing?
How you doing?
Edric, how are you?
Good, good. Good, man. Listen, I haven't had a chance to call all week, and I've been sitting on this for all week long. I want to preface this by saying that I think it took Coach a lot of guts to do what he did.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
And I also want to say that I think if he did it, it's because there's no doubt in his mind. I mean, obviously there's a risk. But I think he's sure that this makes us a better team, and I believe so. You know, I just think it's three of our four losses, Tyrod has been horrendous. He's just regressed. 2015, he was great. Oh, I loved it. But then he just never got better. I actually think he got worse. You know, I think you have to be consistent. I mean, you have to be able to make the easy throws, and Tyrod's making the easy throws look hard, you know. Mm-hmm. And anyone who has watched him, you know, forget the national media. I mean, they're just ridiculous. Anyone who's watched Tyrod knows we haven't won five games because of him. Anyone that's watched knows he just hasn't been very good. And Donald, I have a question for you.
Okay.
I'm actually curious, and also I think this might prove my point. Donald, when you played, and you played under Coach Gailey, who I think is a great offensive mind, when Coach Gailey would call, let's say, 10 offensive pass plays, out of those 10 plays, Donald, how many do you think went to the player that it was designed to go to? Just a number.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You're talking about a time where we were passing it to, you know, Fitz was throwing it to Stevie a lot there. I would say, look, it's 50-50. It's designed a certain way to go to a certain person. You know, you have certain people who are decoy routes to get somebody else open, you know, but you never know what the defense is going to do. It looks like it pre-snap, but then all of a sudden you get a change, you know. So it's probably 50-50. The play goes to where it's designed to go.
Thanks, Edric. Thanks for your call. Hey, Chris Brown had a chance to talk with Bills head coach Sean McDermott this week, and it's Coffee with the Coach presented by Tim Hortons. Here's Chris Brown, Bills insider, BuffaloBills.com, and Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott as the Bills get ready to hit the road and face the Chargers in Los Angeles this coming Sunday. Coach, thanks for being with us. So you're coming off a tough game last week, and I know you're talking about gap integrity with respect to run defense. Talking to some of the players after the game, they said, well, sometimes we may have gotten out of our assignments to the letter. As a coach, how do you keep players from trying to do too much when maybe things aren't going right on the field?
Right. That's easier said than done, obviously. And what happens is when things aren't going well, players try and overcompensate,
right,
and make up for maybe someone who's not doing their job in another gap or what have you. But if you really develop the consistency and the discipline and the trust that you want, then you're able to say, I'm going to do my job and be my 111th, knowing that the guy next to me is going to do his job, right, and be his 111th also.
And taking a look at the Chargers, their defense in particular looks to be really good at some things and not so good at other things. And their pass rush is ranked second in the league. They're good at getting to the quarterback, but their run defense is last in the league. And I know we're at a point in the season here where some of those numbers pretty much hold to form after 8-9 games. When you have such a disparity, how do you digest those figures as a staff in preparing for a team like that?
Well, you look at the personnel that they have with the edge rushers they have, and you know, hey, listen, this is a team that can get to the quarterback. And so, you know, you have to understand who they are as a team schematically, as well as personnel from a standpoint of what they do best and who the game changers could be on defense.
All right, good enough. All right, now it's time for our fan question of the week, where you, the fan, get to ask Coach a question. We go out to our own Lauren Hall at a local Tim Hortons for this week's fan question.
Hey, Chris, we're at the Tim Hortons on Southwestern Boulevard in Orchard Park, and we're with James. James, what's your question for Coach?
My question for Coach is, what is his favorite food to eat?
Okay, Coach, favorite food, what is it?
My favorite food, I must say, Chris, is a chocolate milkshake. Does that qualify
really?
As food? Does it qualify
well,
as food?
Well, yeah, I'd give it to you. It's a dessert.
Friday nights, kind of my cheat night to get out and let it hang loose a little bit. And I've been known to have some ice cream once in a while.
Okay. Well, I wasn't expecting chocolate milkshake. That's a good one. All right, Coach, good luck getting a big win on the road this week.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills.
Chocolate milkshake.
Yeah, most Buffalo people are like that. On a Friday night, you want to hang loose, you go get a shake. No?
I guess. I don't know.
It is a Tim Hortons segment. You could have said an ice cap or something. It's kind of like a milkshake.
Oh, okay.
Hey, big weekend coming up. Donald's got the Saturday game tomorrow, 2 o'clock, New Era Field. You can watch that at onebuffalo.com, streaming video of the high school football game. And also, we got Bills. We get you set up for the Bills and the Chargers coming up this weekend with three shows. Count them, three shows. The Sean McDermott Show. It airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on MSG and Channel 7, WKBW-TV in Buffalo. Following that, immediately following, it is All Access, Bills All Access. Myself and Chris Brown reporting from Los Angeles this week, Sunday at 11:30 on MSG. And then another television show coming up Sunday night after the game. Bills Tonight with Ruben Brown and Mike Catalana, 11:30 p.m. every Sunday after Bills games on MSG. Tune into all three of those shows. We're back to wrap it up in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advance Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater and provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Greg Cosell on the show, his regular Friday shot with us from ESPN's NFL matchup. And Greg Cosell talked about what he has seen on tape from new Bills starting quarterback Nathan Peterman.
I would say for sure. I watched 7 games of Nathan Peterman at Pitt last year, 7 full games, not just highlights. And I thought there was a lot to like about the way he plays, his poise, his refinement. He did play a lot under center. He throws with anticipation, with accuracy. The question that people had with him, and I remember talking to a number of people about him, very few people didn't like the way he played. The issue for a lot of people was arm strength. Was it below the level at which you can succeed in the NFL?
Greg Cosell on Nathan Peterman. Peterman. I finally got the L.A. San Diego thing down, and I'm calling the quarterback the wrong name. All right. We also had just not too long ago on the line with us Tom Telesco, the Buffalo native general manager of the Los Angeles Chargers. Tom Telesco talked about his new head coach, former Bills interim head coach Anthony Lynn.
You guys know Anthony a little bit, so this is not surprising to you how he handles things, how he handles situations. There's not a lot of gray area with Anthony. It's either black or white, and he knows exactly what he wants, and he can communicate that to people. And I think the players appreciate that, and the coaches appreciate that, that the staff certainly does. And he does a good job of keeping players focused on what they need, what they can control. And there's been some different challenges this year, but he's been a great leader for us.
Tom Telesco on Anthony Lynn. Donald, unlike last week, I do not have a prediction for Sunday's game. Last week, I was woefully inept in predicting the outcome, so I don't have anything for you today.
I don't have anything either. No. We got to see how this whole thing plays out. And everybody's looking at Nathan Peterman. Ultimately, defense, you got to play better.
All right. We'll talk about it Monday. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, and Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Back at 12 noon on Monday with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.